Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Two shows in a row. I'm so proud. It is a minute and a half past the hour. Thus begins the Tuesday evening edition of The Horn. I'm Bob, and I hope your day has been a good one, wherever it has been, wherever you have been, wherever... Well, maybe it'll be a good one, because this is tomorrow, not today. And Time. Time flies like an arrow. Fruit flies like a banana. Never mind, that was just awful. But there is an element of time to the wee complaint that initiates the program this evening. By the way, speaking of time, I enjoyed the nigh 4 hours that I pulled last night with you guys. It was a lot of fun going extra innings in since Malloy was absent. We just took a run at... doing a little more show than we ordinarily would have been. But Malloy's back live this evening, I understand, so we're back to our regular format. Hot diggity damn. No, time. And really, this is petty on my part. But for the same reason that I felt like I had to be on the air last night after I saw the developing murderous debacle in the Mediterranean, in which Israeli pirates raided a nonviolent, peace-oriented ship full of humanitarian aid bound for Gaza, the same thing that made me feel, it's the same thing that makes me frustrated at the end of oh so many shows for the stuff that we don't get to. And one of the, well, and then there's the stuff that breaks as soon as I close the microphone, and I, you know, those are Homer Simpson don't moments. Because I had no sooner closed out the show, and I went an extra hour last night, you know? I had no sooner closed out the show than the folks over at Think Progress posted a new item, and yesterday being Memorial Day, they didn't post diddly practically all day long. Among other things, there wasn't a word about the Israeli nightmare. And you know what? I'm glad to say that they did find time to mention it today. And what they found time to mention was extremely disturbing. But last night, as soon as the program closed, bing! Here came a brand new posting over at thinkprogress.org. They do great work. They really, really do. But it was one of those that made me tear at my clothing, rip at my hair, and want to go run screaming naked into the night. It's a comment from BP, Brutal Pricks. That's what BP stands for. BP CEO Tony Hayward. And I'm not going to read it to you. I'm going to let Tony Hayward tell you himself.
Sunday, BP's CEO apologized.
We're sorry for the massive disruption it's caused to their lives.
Oh, how charming. It's a massive disruption. And there. It would appear they're having to eat raisin as scones for a week down there on that miserable
semi-tropical Gulf Coast. They've had their lives disrupted. We apologize for the disruption in their life, of course. We will try to get them back to the pecan scones or whatever it is that they like to eat as soon as we humanly possibly can. Yes, of course.
You know, there's no one who wants this thing over more than I do. You know, I'd like my life back.
Life here.
Yeah. Oh, Bob, hang on. Strap in, Bob. Oh, Bob, don't reach for the doorknob. The sun is still up, Bob. You can't run screaming naked out the door because that miserable, brutish prick, Tony Hayward, has just said he'd like to have his life back. Wah. Tony Hayward wants his life back. There's no one who wants this over more than I do. I would like my life back. Has anyone gone running for the anti-emetics yet? There's no one wants it, so I want my life back, old boy. Get me back to the club. Find a nice reptile to go with my... Wait, a reptile, for I'm a reptile. I made it funny. I want to get back to the club. I haven't had a good Pim's Cup in quite some time. Heaven's sakes. This is taking away all my time from... Do you realize how long it's been since I played powwow with his harness? It's been 3 months and I've chosen neither cut nor cloth for a new outfit. I'm wearing clothing that's been worn twice. They're practically hand-me-downs. I feel like one of you American ragamuffin street urchins. Tony Hayward would like his life back. I'd like to give Tony Hayward his life back in a cell that's about 6x6. In a facility that's commonly referred to as a supermax in Colorado. He can spend the rest of his life playing effing Scrabble with the Unabomber and the Blind Sheik. That's the life I'd like to give Tony Hayward back. The nerve. I'm sorry if you tune in to hear me scream. I'm all fresh out of screaming. I'm just done plumb fresh out of screaming. The godforsaken nerve of this criminal corporate monster. He knew the camera was rolling. No one took advantage of him. No one wants this over more than we do. I'd like my life back. You know, John Cleese, if he was parodying the classic British technocratic corporate type, John Cleese could not have more thoroughly and completely lampooned Tony Hayward than Tony Hayward himself did. He's standing down there. He's got a nice crisp pair of khakis. You know, of course, these aren't any khakis, of course. These are made by the same tailor on Savile Row who made my great-grandfather's back in the day of the Raj. Yes, it's his tie. It's my school tie. And the regimental stripe, of course, that I'm wearing there with a bespoke hand-cut shirt. What a nose-rubbing. The sad thing is, they say these things when there's no one there. When there's no one there to respond.
And, of course, America's for-profit corporate journalists ain't gonna. Mr. Hayward, how dare you say that down here in a place where entire economies, entire lives have been ruined? Mr. Hayward, you didn't, you know, you didn't just make force people to take 2 or 3 weeks away from their jobs. You ruined their lives forever, Mr. Hayward.
I like my life back.
Jesus. We'd like our golf back, Mr. Hayward. We'd like that negligent hole that you punched in the bottom of the seafloor and 30,000 feet below it filled up, filled in, and ended, and we'd like for you to go out of business cleaning it up. We'd really like that, Mr. Hayward.
Yes, but I want my life back. There's my effing crumpet.
Has anyone started running the numbers? I'm sure someone has. Out there, there's a law firm that's already involved in litigation against these punk bastards. Sorry, that's an insult to punks. Against these rotten bastards. Somewhere, there's an accountant running the economic losses and then doing this little magic trick called reducing them to present value. You know, shrimping and oystering is brutally hard work. You can forget about all that cute crap from the Forrest Gump. First of all, that movie was an abortion of the book itself. And second of all, I'm sorry, you know, Lieutenant Dan ain't on the stern a-hauling in the shrimpies. It is brutal, hard, back-breaking work that is, dusk till dawn or worse. And all of those jobs, all of those livelihoods, all of those livings, all of those ways of life, because, you know, sitting up in West Main Street Elementary in Flint, Michigan, you don't say, well, someday I want to go down to the Gulf Coast and be a shrimper. You don't do that. These are life ways. Granted, we tend to measure everything by economic impact. But if you're a shrimper, odds are your daddy was a shrimper, and your granddaddy was a shrimper, and your great-granddaddy was a shrimper. Or as they say down there, thereabouts, they forget the SH, they forget that diphthong, and it's shrimp. Shrimp. Shrimp and oysters. And it's no more a job to you than breathing is. It is as much and as little as the very essence of your being. As a little kid, there are men and women both who are shrimpers. As a little kid, you got your sea legs under you when you were 3, 4, 5 years old. And now it's gone. And you've learned the same hard lesson, you've had the same hard lesson brutally taught you that folks in Alaska had taught them 20 years ago. You know, when I was in Utah, I heard someone talking about Alaska, and they said, I know people who committed suicide over this stuff. Every metric by which they measured their lives was completely upended and rendered totally existentially meaningless. And they killed themselves. Because there was nothing left to hold on the planet anymore. All the handles were greased with oil. And so it is along the Gulf Coast.
with the shrimp and an oyster and crabbing culture. Oh, God, 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 what's lost? And I'm a foodie, and you know it. And I can only tell you that forget it, you ain't having them now, and neither am I, and neither is nobody else. But if you had never had shrimp, down along the Gulf Coast where we would go on the Redneck Riviera, Lower Alabama, they refer to them as Royal Reds. And they're the shrimp that they don't export. And the damn things are as long as snakes. And when they're out of the water less than 24 hours, then when they're that fresh, when you're picking them up off the boat, and you steam them, and you pop the head off the shrimp, and you peel him, you peel that tail, well, they'll bring you cocktail sauce. They'll bring you drawn butter, clarified butter. But you don't need it. The taste of those shrimp fresh out of the water is sweet all by itself, buttery all by itself, and wonderful. And I ain't having that no more. And you ain't having that no more. And none of us are having that no more. But Tony Hayward would like his life back, you see. Because, you see, he's a multimillionaire. Perhaps he's a billionaire, and he can fly to some other portion of the planet where when the shrimp are brought fresh out of the water, oh boy, bring me 2 pounds of your finest shrimp. Chop, chop, boy. There's an extra shilling in it for you if you get it here on the double quick. You can always go somewhere else and do that. But that was our Gulf. And those are our fellow Americans down there who have been run from rack to ruin. Out of nothing more than BP's ceaseless, merciless drive for more money. And so we deal with the consequences of greed, and yes, 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 you can't get around it. Capitalism and the Randian model. Because you see, in Ayn Rand's world, and of course, if you've ever seen an interview with Ayn Rand, you can take some comfort in the fact that Ayn Rand would never be allowed to teach English in Arizona because of the way she spoke it. But she didn't speak it so much as she wrote it, and what she wrote has poisoned an entire generations of people who have been taught to believe that avarice is good. And that concern for the well-being of one's fellow citizens is a character flaw and a weakness. And we reap that filthy harvest in the Gulf of Mexico. We've done it off the, well, you've all heard Steve Forbert's The Oil Song. I played the updated version, all 14 minutes of it, brought forward all the way to 2010. And we don't have the first, the for-profit media can't quite bring itself to wonder why it is in 2010 we're still doing this. When we've known since the early 70s that oil was going to be the doom of this nation. That doesn't speak well of our nation, does it? That we can be so plainly warned, so clearly advised against a course of action and still take that course, devil may care, and come what may. Kind of makes you think we're screwed, doesn't it? You know, I don't want Tony Hayward tried before a jury of his peers. I know what peers means in British English. I want Tony Hayward tried before a jury of Cajuns. I want him to stand, you know, just like the British do. I think I like that tradition where the defendant has to stand in the dock. Of course, maybe they don't do that anymore. But I want him to stand there and hear the charges read against him. And the name of every shrimp and oyster and crab and fish and family along the Gulf Coast whose lives, generationally spanning, were ruined because he decided he wasn't rich enough yet. I want that. And then, when he's been tried, and when he's been convicted, then, yes, Mr. Hayward, we will gladly give you your life back, and you can spend it for the rest of your days in a Supermax facility in Colorado, getting friendly with some of the other worst, most malevolent bastards ever to walk upon the planet. We want you to have your life back, too. We want you to enjoy it, Mr. Hayward, in considerably closer quarters than that to which you are presently accustomed. You understand? This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
As the son of a sailor, I went out on the sea for adventure, expanding the view of the captain and crew like a man just released from indenture. As a dreamer of dreams and a traveling man, I have chalked up many a mile, read dozens of books about heroes and crooks, and I learned much both of their styles. Son of a son, son of a son, son of a son of a sailor, son of a gun, load the last gun, one step ahead. Jailer. Now way in the near future, southeast of disorder, you can shake the hand of the mangled man as he greets you at the border. And the lady she hails from Trinidad, island of the spices, salt grey of meat and cinnamon sweet, and the rum is for all your goodbyes. Haul the sheet in as we ride on the wind that our forefathers harnessed before us. Hear the bells ring as the tide rigging sings. It's the son of a gun of a chorus. I might toss out my anchor, so I'll cruise along, always searching for songs. Not a lawyer, a thief, or a banker, but son of a son, son of a son, son of a son of a sailor, son of a gun, load the last. got the head of the jailer. I'm just a son of a son, son of a son, son of a son of a sailor. The sea's in my veins, my tradition remains. I'm just glad I don't live in a trailer.
Wow, that was perfect. 26 minutes past the hour, Jimmy Buffett, of course, and son of a sailor. And he really is Jimmy Buffett. No, he really is Jimmy Buffett, but he really is the son of a sailor. His people immigrated southward from Canada back when Buffett was pronounced Buffet, I guess. And built a, you know, the grandfather built a fishing and shrimping tradition that probably pre-existed back up in Canada as well. And that culture is real. You know, I've heard it said that the two most distinct cultures in the U.S. are Appalachian people and Cajuns. And we share one thing in common. We became so because we were driven to where we live, and then as soon as we... And I'm talking about white people. I'm not talking about Native Americans, Indians, everyone. That's just acknowledged. But we are both put upon peoples. And we are both people who have been culturally ripped off and raped over the years. Although, as a hillbilly, I must say, I give the tip of the hat and the old corncob pipe or whatever to the Cajun culture for the cooking. We can't touch it. We can't touch it. Yeah, we got ramps and ginseng, and so we can't touch it. Come on. No, let's not kid ourselves. One of these days, I gotta find an excuse to go and broadcast live from some bayou festival or something where I can just spend a week gorging myself on jambalaya and etouffee and andouille and all that wonderful stuff. Just gotta. Mm. But then again, no, I ain't gonna. Because that rotten jerk-off, Tony Hayward, has made sure that I won't. Because he's poisoned everything that... Well, you'll forgive me if I can't help noting the fact that these two decidedly unique cultures have had the rug ripped right out from under them. The mountains that define Appalachia and the brackish bayou waters and the gulf waters that define Cajun culture. And why? Why? It's the same damned answer! The insatiable avarice for energy goo! Whether it's coal in Appalachia or oil off the Gulf Coast, the end result screwing is the same. John Fox has sent along a long-distance dedication for Tony Hayward. Do please. Jerk off, Tony Hayward. This is going out for you, from John on the horn.
Someone told me once that there's a horizon. refreshing. I feel all better now, only I don't.
You know, I sit there and I think about things like those Royal Reds. Oh, look them up. They were wonderful. And even though the last time I was down on the Redneck Riviera, the last time the family and I were on that beautiful sugar white sand beach, God, it was 11 years ago, and we haven't had a vacation since. We ate them. We ate them every damn day till we thought we were sick of them. And that's just shameless consumption in its own right. But, I mean, we had them boiled, steamed, fried, every conceivable, and wow! And even though I may never go back to my beloved Alabama again, or God knows the Redneck Riviera, even though there was a value, don't you know, in knowing it was there. I guess maybe it's a kind of, and there's the second use of the word in the program today, a sort of existential thing. But the Gulf was there. And somebody was sitting on a beach with an ice-cold something or another, or perched at the end of the bar stool at the Floribama Lounge, or sitting in the Gulf Shores steamer with a great big humongous pile of those shrimp fresh out of the water less than 24 hours. And they were smiling because at that point in time, and because, as Robert Frost noted, happiness makes up in height for what it lacks in length, they were happy. And I could be happy at a distance, knowing it was there. And I can't no more. That sorry, rotten rat, pathetic excuse for a member of the human race who has replaced conceptions of money with conceptions of humanity, Tony Hayward. That sorry bastard. He and his cronies and his little board of directors have ruined it for millions of us. The whole damn planet! Clayton writing in to report 31% of Gulf of Mexico unfishable! Kate writing in to say, by the way, shrimpers and their way of life? She said, I'd like to mention the Vietnamese families who were displaced by the corporate police action in the 1970s. They came to the Gulf Coast and started their society, their culture, their economy, all over again. And now we've ruined their families, their culture, their world, twice! The media are still calling it... Oh, you forgot the two most important words, Kate. The for-profit media are still calling it an oil spill. Oh, look, oh, damn, get some paper towels, I had a spill. Oh dear, it sloshed over into my salsa. For-profit media are still saying oil spill, and no one is talking about an extinction event. Why is the phrase cleanup even being tossed around? There's no cleanup. It is O-V-E-E-R, over. There are 33 more rigs, Kate observes, out in the water that are operating without regulation. There we go. You know, next. Meanwhile, I guess it's being reported on one of the television shows out there that President Obama's disapproval rating has reached 42%. His approval is at 39%. I don't usually go in for that horse race kind of stuff, but it's fairly easy to see why that is. You know, he was weathering the teabaggers and stuff. But it's when you get a chance to act and be presidential and you choose not to. That's when it matters. And it doesn't, you know, it doesn't help, and there's more to be talked about this tonight. Sorry, I'm going to try not to get all monomaniacal and just focused on one thing. There's a lot of stuff to go through this evening. But, yeah, there's more stuff on the piracy on the high seas committed by the Israelis. They kidnapped a couple of hundred people who are still in a status of kidnappee, still being held hostage by the Israelis, because, you see, that's the thing. They had no right to kidnap the people. Otherwise, it would have been, you know, some sort of police work or something, but it wasn't. They weren't in Israeli waters. They weren't. The law of civilized nations says that Israel had no right to go out and board that ship. And there are people, and because it wasn't headed for Israel. It was headed for a place that wasn't Israel. And they kidnapped those people. And the kidnappees are now held incommunicado by a rogue state that has no regard for the rule of law among civilized nations. But we'll get to that. So, you know, Tony Hayward wants his life back. This distraction is simply, it's a completely wrong time of year. I'd really much rather this happened when the weather wasn't quite so nice. Jesus. No, there's more stuff tonight. There's plenty more stuff. Right off the bat, however, we will go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Hello, Jim.
Yeah, I want to discuss a few things very quickly that have been on my mind.
Go ahead.
All right, as far as the Gulf economy is concerned, we're talking about three elements, a triad that support it. The first, of course, is recreation, beaches, things of that nature.
Right. Sport fishing, that kind of thing.
Second, of course, is the seafood industry. And the third is the oil industry that supports that entire region. And this is what I've been able to gather from sources on CNN as well as the Internet as well. I don't know what percentages would be if you could break it into a pie graph. Constitute the economy of the Gulf, but the oil industry down there certainly, I would say, constitutes a considerable portion of that whole economy. And, you know, it's just not going to go away. How many rigs are there in the Gulf now? 18,000? 14,000?
No, there's five, something like 5,000.
Okay, I've heard it's more than that, but nonetheless. Now, second thing, in the Department of the Interior. I think it's MMR that has the regulatory authority over these oil rigs. Is that not true?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, Birnbaum, who was in charge of that, either was fired or resigned. I never could quite get to the bottom of that. But I would like to know who is responsible for not ensuring what happened 48 days ago? In other words, this breakage, this whatever.
Well, can I get to that sort of by a long roundabout? You know me, Jim.
But who is ultimately in charge of regulating these platforms and the drilling procedures? Who is in charge of that, as far as the federal government is concerned?
Well, that the short answer is that all fell under MMS. And if we are to believe which falls under the Department of Interior, and if we are to believe the Obama administration, MMS has been completely deconstructed, scrapped, torn down, and the earth salted behind it. Because it was hopelessly corrupt. You know, this is the result of crony capitalism, among other things, of 8 years of George W. Bush, and more particularly Dick Cheney. You know, the fact that the for-profit media is talking about Obama's response to this as opposed to talking about Dick Cheney's active hand in it is proof of their success at the right wing's success at manipulating and massaging the story itself.
I understand that, and I have many times said to you how I despise the fact that they were able to go in and emasculate certain federal agencies whose functions were to protect the consumer.
I mean, by now, if you follow Keith Olbermann or Rachel Maddow or any of those folks, you've read, heard, or seen the stories of how the MMS was literally in bed with BP. Stories of MMS people and BP people snorting crystal meth off toaster ovens together.
Well,
and the answer to your question is, MMS was supposed to be making sure that didn't happen, but they gave waivers. And as Kate noted, there are other rigs out in the Gulf as we speak, Jim, operating on similar waivers.
Waivers?
Waivers.
Well, these waivers are going to have to be withdrawn, and these rigs are going to have to be, if they can, I don't know if they can or not, whether it's physically possible, but they're going to have to secure those rigs so that we don't have a repeat performance of this.
You know, the idea that Tony Hayward is out there saying, I want my life back.
Well, I'm sure he does, and I would like him to have it back. I would like to have the last 48 days back. I wish this thing had never happened. And I could care less of what happens to him, whether they put him in Supermax or whatever, because I was the one who suggested that originally a couple last week.
You did indeed.
But, you know, who I want to go after are the people who permitted this man to operate under such unsafe conditions. That's where we really need to emphasize.
Well, it is an absolute fact, Jim, that other countries do these sorts of wells, and whether one should be doing these sorts of wells is another philosophical debate. But other countries do these sorts of wells, and they do them with the double layers of redundancy underneath them,
exactly,
or behind them, so that this can't happen.
Pardon me?
So that this can't happen.
Right, right.
But in the land of the free corporate, we don't do it that way. All they had to do was whine a little bit and get some right wing flax and shills out there, creating a perpetual mindset that government regulation is somehow deleterious to the holy function of government, which is to facilitate corporate profit taking. And the next thing you know, there's no redundancy, there's no pre-drilled relief well, none of that stuff exists.
No regulation, no redundancy, no fail-safe measures or whatever to protect man or beast, correct?
Correct. But it's not because that doesn't exist in the rest of the world.
Well, I know that, but I'm saying that, well, I guess what I'm trying to say is we need to go after the people who were allowed to see this happen. And if it can be traced back to, of course, it can be traced back to Bush, probably even before Bush.
It does. It traces. I mean, ultimately, you know, it's sort of like tracing original sin, Jim. Ultimately, it traces back to the fact that we have behaved as a profligate and acted as though there was some little factory down under the earth that was constantly manufacturing more oil.
But, you know, here's the thing, Bob. When you talk about oil, you're not talking just about petroleum products and gasoline and lubricants and stuff for automobiles. You're talking about an entire industry, plastics industry. I mean, the very phone that I'm holding in my hand is a petroleum-based product.
Sure. The same thing goes for most of the stuff that surrounds me as we speak.
Exactly, our petroleum-based products. And these are, you know, have certainly enabled us to have a better way of life in many respects. If you go into a doctor's office and you remove all the plastics and the petroleum-based products, you wouldn't have any rubber gloves. You wouldn't have a lot of stuff that you have that contributes to the, you know, the quality of life. And, you know, if we're going to, we are using a finite resource, but we have used it for other areas than just, you know, propellants and fuels and stuff like that. It really goes everywhere. I mean, the petroleum industry has its effects on every aspect of modern life. And we depend upon it such, and that's where our chemistry has developed. And I wish to God that we had gone another way and could have developed other products that weren't petroleum-based that we could use. But, you know, I'm afraid that that's just not the case. We can't undo, we can't...
Well, again, but, you know, I guess what I'm saying, I guess one of the things that I can't help noticing, Jim, is that whether you're talking about coal or whether you're talking about oil, we still find ourselves talking about the same thing, to wit, that if we are going to acknowledge that it has certain uses that are necessary for our civilization as we understand it, then we had better, by God, be paying attention to its finitude, shouldn't we? Because if we don't, it's going to run out, and then there ain't going to be none of what you just mentioned.
Finitude is a good word for it, exactly. And, you know, I mean, for example, they developed during World War II synthetic gasoline, synthetic rubber, and synthetic other products. I mean, the Germans did this when they were there.
All the children of my generation who ever sat down and opened that little plastic egg of Silly Putty, were playing with the end result of the American attempt to develop synthetic rubber. I don't know if you know that or not, but you remember Silly Putty? You know, it would stretch, and you could, and it would bounce, and it would lift up the ink off the Sunday funnies, and you could stretch it and play Photoshop before there was ever Photoshop.
Oh yeah, sure.
Well, that was one of those things that got invented along the way in the wartime effort to replace rubber, and that was the only thing they could come up with to do with it. And Silly Putty was always so much more fun than Play-Doh.
Well, all I know is that this has been a very bitter lesson, and it's been an ongoing...
But Jim, not to be argumentative, you say this has been a very bitter lesson, but let me put the question to you. If nothing is learned from it, is it still a lesson?
Well, yes, it's going to be a lesson because a lot's going to be learned from this, I can guarantee you, just like Chernobyl.
But and I guess maybe I'm a little further into my pessimism than you are this evening yourself. But how much did we learn from the Exxon Valdez? How much did we learn from that very same platform put up by the very same company off the Mexican coast that was almost the very same situation? How much did we learn from that? Because obviously we're still doing it.
Well, we're still doing it because, I mean, the Exxon Valdez is a huge tanker, correct?
Yes.
And that's how they haul a lot of stuff, are in these huge tankers. I don't know how much more safe they can make them. I don't know what can be done to the people who regulate the sea lanes that these tankers travel to ensure that they don't run aground or they don't fall apart or whatever.
You know, Jim, for the right wing is forever talking things, you know, what we need. For instance, if you want to put out if you want to try to create a new law about handguns in the U.S., the National Republican Rifle Association says things like, well, we don't need new laws. We need to enforce laws we got. And you know what? There is an element of truth to some of that, because the fact of the matter is the reason the Exxon Valdez didn't stop the Gulf, and the reason the Gulf, the Horizon disaster will not stop the next one, is because there's no incentive in it for the corporate millionaires and billionaires. You know, we talk about deterring crime, and we've got laws out there that say, by God, if you are young and American and black, and we catch you in the presence of a .45 semi-automatic and a $20 rack of cocaine, rock of crack, we are going to send you to prison for life. But we don't have any laws, Jim, and I'm not yelling at you, you know.
We don't have any laws that say that to our corporate betters. We don't have hard time for oil crime laws for Tony Hayward. We don't have three strikes and you're out laws for Don Blankenship. And that's the fundamental problem. There's nothing to deter them from doing this.
Well, that's the reason a couple of weeks ago that I quoted those figures about the lobbyists in Washington and how much money 1,726 lobbyists are paid and how much money they pay out to each member of Congress. Remember? That's part of it right there.
Sure.
I mean, we're talking about $798.5 million that are paid these 726 lobbyists to give $1.4 million per day to all 535 members of Congress, and God only knows who else, an average of $1 million a day if you want to spread it out evenly, depending on which. And in the first quarter of this year, those figures have gone up 3.2% as far as lobbyist expenditures and the money that's being taken from them are concerned. I think that's part of the problem that we're talking about right here, and the lack of incentive to impose ironclad regulations on these corporate structures and to prevent another occurrence like this thing in the Gulf with the Horizon Oil platform. That's what I've been trying to say. I would like to go over anybody who's responsible, but I would certainly like to go after first the people who gave these people permission through not enforcing what they're supposed to do, and of course the members of the MMM or MMR or whatever that organization is. I mean, there's so many acronyms that I've had to forget, but nonetheless, those people who had these sweetheart deals with these oil companies to get baseball tickets and the God only knows what else, just to look the other way and to allow these safety measures and redundancy systems not to be made mandatory. That's what I'm thinking about here.
And I think you are wholly correct. I guess
but
the question.
I wish I could make all this oil go right back into earth. I wish we could put this genie right back in the bottle, but we can't.
No, and if we do not, and that, yes, I agree with you. If we don't have a meaningful search, and granted, the Republicans like to, well, Dana Perino said it today on Fox, you know, Dana Perineal, said it today on Fox or somewhere. You know, we can't run around playing the blame game. I hate that, Jim. I hate that like God hates sin. We can't play the blame game. Because, as I've said before, when you say things like that, that means we cannot impose liability by the traditional legal and judicial and jurisprudential means that we have applied for the last 700 years.
Well, I'll tell you one thing right now. What would have happened at Nuremberg if somebody had said, we can't play the blame game?
Exactly.
And, you know, it didn't work out quite that way. I wish they could have blamed and drawn in a lot more of those sons of bitches who were responsible for that horrendous part of our history. But at least we made an effort at that point and, you know, to bring some of them to justice. And I think the same thing should happen here. I really do. And as far as the only way I can go forward from something like this is to, number one, is you said before, we're going to have to plug this hole up no matter how we do it. And number two, we're going to have to take measures to ensure that it doesn't happen again. And by the way, last night when you were talking about rogue nations and things like that, we have a whole bunch of these rogue nations. And I think this country, in my opinion, to a certain extent, has been a rogue nation. And, you know, I was just thinking, I wish that Michael Rennie would land on the lawn of the White House or the National Mall in a spaceship with his big robot and tell the leaders of this world, if you don't straighten up and get your affairs in order, we will reduce you to a blackened cinder because we will no longer tolerate your ruthlessness and your lack of compassion and responsibility and the stewardship of your own planet, and because we sure as hell don't, we do not wish for you to be spreading it.
And maybe this time, Jim, the robot doesn't come pre-programmed to respond to Klaatu Barada Nikto.
That robot was inclined to go anywhere where there was aggression and eliminate it, and they themselves had given those robots power. You know, whatever it takes, I'm at that point.
Me too.
To stop the
and I'm not. Yeah, and I'm not willing to accept as viable punishment the fact that Tony Hayward will have to wait a second year for his new Bentley this time.
Well, I don't know what's going to happen to Mr. Hayward, because I think Mr. Hayward's going to have a few sticky wickets before he is going to have his life back. I really do. I don't think he's going to be allowed to exactly walk away from this without some type of punitive action.
But remember, you've got a right-wing coalition government running the show in the UK now. And for all I know, they're working on his peerage.
Well, I don't know about that. If he's going to be elevated to the peerage or not, I mean, whether they call him sir or madam or whatever. But I'm talking about what he's done here and what he's been like. But not only that, Bob, but what he's been allowed to do here. That's where I get really upset. What he's been allowed to do. He's been allowed to use this entire area as a playground by someone who's been looking the other way. And that's who I'm really angry with.
And your anger is well placed.
Okay. Well,
the question is, ultimately it's a question, Jim, of do we still have anything that resembles a national will?
Oh, I definitely think we do. And I think we can have one.
And if we have a national will, can we bring it to bear on the likes of BP and Tony Hayward?
Here's the thing, Bob. Our national will, as we once knew it, has been so polarized and so fragmented by elements that are designed to cause people to be at loggerheads with one another. And we talked about Fox News. We talked about some of these people who plainly distort the truth and who absolutely lie. And this is one of the contributing factors to the lack of a national will that we used to have. I mean, before and during World War II, we had a national will in this country. We did. It's not longer, just no longer the case anymore. And people like Fox News and some of those idiots on there and Rupert Murdoch and there are hundreds of others. Some of these right-wing religious industrial people who don't give a damn about the spiritual well-being of their followers but only how much money can be contributed to them, that's part of it too. And it's called... And the
other part of it that makes me a little bit crazy... statement by Coast Guard Admiral Thad Allen last week. He said, and it's, you know, there's four little words. He said, "I trust Tony Hayward." Really, Admiral? Really?
Dude, he ended, and he's been re-extended. Now, I wonder who in the Bureau of... Well, let's see. Coast Guard used to be under DOT. Who is it under now?
No, I'm not sure. Ministry of Silly Walks, as far as I can tell.
They transferred Coast Guard from DOT to Homeland Security.
Without a doubt. Yeah, you're right.
But who in the hell would extend this man's tour of duty when he has failed so miserably to complete his first or last tour successfully? All they had their head examined and their ass kicked. And that really makes me angry as well. They need to have a new broom in there that will sweep very clean. But like I say, going back to our national will, it has been fragmented by so many things, so many dissonance, and people who are using its fragmentation for their own benefit. Whether it's Rush Limbaugh, or whether it's that idiot over at Virginia Beach, Pat Robertson, or whether it's these crazy-ass right-to-life people who will kill you over a fetus, but don't give a tinker's damn about what happens to that fetus after it's born. And, you know, I told one of them the other day that was trying to talk to me, I said, look, come down off the cross. Somebody else needs the fucking wood. Excuse me, I didn't mean to say that.
I know, but that's my world. I know, no, I get it.
But I mean, I finally, in exasperation, I simply said that. I said, you know, I do not understand. I said, what are you going to do? Do you plan to stay right on this earth right now, or do you plan to just sprout wings and ascend into heaven before the rapture? I said, what are you going to do? I said, come down off the cross. Somebody else needs the wood. And then I gave him dial tone.
Attaboy, Jim. Attaboy. Great conversation this evening. Thank you, Jim. Take care.
All right. Good night.
Good night. Calling from a county over, that's our buddy Jim. It's about 4 minutes past the hour. We're going to take a little break to get things broken up as they properly and ought to be. We've got, it's Tuesday. It's Green News Report night from Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen, so we got to find time for that. I screwed up last Thursday and didn't run it. I'm sorry, Brad. Sorry, Desi. Dadgummit, I'm a bad person. But we will take a break. Just check out the Green News Report. We'll come back to, your calls. You know the number, of course, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. Email rolls easily in to Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid, at gmail.com. So light them up. Got a couple of lines open. We'll get to the calls that are already online. First, right out of the gate when we get back from the break. You're listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. You're listening to The Horn. Somehow all of this just seems kind of apropos this evening. Take it away, Jim.
Big storm's coming soon. I passed out in my hammock and got us left away past noon. Stood up and tried to focus. I hoped I wouldn't have to look far. I knew I could use a Bloody Mary. Through a stumble next door to the bar, and now I must confess I could use some rest. I can't run at this pace very long. Yes, it's quite insane. I think it hurts my brain, but it cleans. There's something about this Sunday, it's a most peculiar grave. Strolling down the avenue that's known as 818. Feeling tired, and then I got inspired. I knew that it wouldn't last long. So sat on my beach and then I made up this song, and now I must confess I could use some rest. I can't run at this pace very long. Yes, it's quite insane. I think it hurts my brain, but then and I'm watching for water spouts. It's time to close the shutters. It's time to go inside. In a week I'll be in Gay Perry. That's a mighty long airplane ride. And now I must confess, I can use some rest.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Tuesday, June 1, 2010.
The oil apocalypse continues. BP's next new plan.
So no one knows what the f*** they're doing.
As Obama calls for accountability.
My solemn pledge is that we will bring those responsible to justice on behalf of the victims of this catastrophe and the people of the Gulf region.
Plus, crackdown on coal mining, sinkhole in Guatemala, and sneaky propositions in California.
All of that and more straight ahead. I'm Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
The Russians have suggested a solution they've used 5 times, which is to cap the oil leak by detonating an underground nuclear warhead. Of course, the only downside of that plan is that it might unleash a mutant crab army onto the streets of New Orleans.
Sounds as reasonable as everything else they've tried. This is your Green News Report.
You do not want giant pincers around that many exposed nipples. No.
The Green News Report is sponsored by you, our listeners. Yes, you. Please stop by our website, greennews.bradblog.com, and hit that PayPal button so that we can afford to continue bringing you the most feisty green news, politics, and analysis you'll find on the mainstream media. We rely on your support. Stop by bradblog.com today, hit the PayPal button, and send your vote for the Green News Report to continue. Okay, Desi Doyen, day 43 of the Gulf oil disaster, and we had Colbert joking in the opening there about nuking the well, but is it a joke? Why don't they at least bomb the well, if not use nukes? Why don't they just bomb the damn thing?
No, what could possibly go wrong?
Well, no, but it has been done before, has it not?
It has, but some analysts are saying that that actually could make the problem worse by creating a crater rather than just a hole.
So their hesitancy to bomb the well has nothing to do with the fact that it'll make it more difficult for them to get back at that same oil?
No, I think it's because it'll make it more difficult to stop the thing.
Okay.
More on the oil disaster in a minute, but first, it's primary season where voters will be choosing not just candidates, but also statewide initiatives. Next Tuesday in California, some very sneaky propositions are on the ballot, like Proposition 16, an initiative bankrolled entirely by electric utility Pacific Gas and Electric to maintain its stranglehold on electric rates. Prop 16 will make it harder for communities to form cooperatives to buy their own electricity. The corporate sponsors of all of these initiatives are hoping that low turnout will help their sneaky propositions pass. So please read up on the issues and get out there and vote. If you're in California, that's next Tuesday, June 8th.
This Prop 16 thing is insidious. Pacific Gas and Electric has put out a millions-dollar campaign disinforming voters, claiming that this will give voters the right to vote on small governments starting their own clean energy initiatives. This thing is really insidious. No on Prop 16, says me.
Today is opening day of the Atlantic hurricane season, predicted to be very active this year by NOAA. And did you know that BP's deepwater drill site in the Gulf is located on something of a superhighway for hurricanes? Yep. A hurricane reaching the Gulf of Mexico could drive even more oil onshore. Hurricane season is already underway on the Pacific coast, where at least 150 people are dead after Tropical Storm Agatha slammed into Central America. Hardest hit is Guatemala, where rescue efforts are hampered by a volcano erupting near the capital. And you got to see the photo of a huge sinkhole that opened up in Guatemala City. It looks bottomless, like something out of a horror movie.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible.
Coal mining crackdown. West Virginia Governor Joe Manchin launched surprise inspections of the most troubled mines in West Virginia after the massive explosion at the Upper Big Branch mine in his state in April that killed 29 miners. These surprise inspections have resulted in 128 new safety violations in just the last month. Two mines have been closed until the problems are fixed.
Good for Governor Manchin. I've said it before. I'll say it again. The luckiest man in the world right now is Massey CEO Don Blankenship, who should be facing accountability. Hopefully he will for his coal mining disaster, but he's lucky because everybody's now looking down at the Gulf at the other fossil fuel disaster we have to deal with.
And speaking of that other fossil fuel disaster, President Obama met earlier today in the nation's capital with the leaders of a new presidential blue ribbon commission to investigate the oil disaster.
In doing this work, they have my full support to follow the facts wherever they may lead, without fear or favor. We owe all those who've been harmed, as well as future generations, a full and vigorous accounting of the events that led to what has now become the worst oil spill in U.S. history.
And to that end, U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder is in the Gulf today to meet with federal prosecutors. Over the weekend, BP said the top kill failed, so now they have begun the next attempts to control the leak, a so-called cut-and-cap process, making a clean cut to the riser pipe and installing a small dome to collect the oil and pipe it to the surface. They said that'll take about 4 to 7 days. This step, like all the others, has never been tried before at this depth. And we now know that in its permit application to drill in deep water in the Gulf, BP claimed to the federal government that it could handle a spill 10 times larger than what we have now. BP's oil spill response plan was approved by the Federal Minerals Management Service, even though none of these techniques have ever been tried at this depth before.
What do you know? They lied. And now, to really get good at it, I understand that BP has hired the former press secretary for Dick Cheney to be their PR representative. Stand by for the lies coming fast and furious. For much more on the Gulf oil disaster, check out our website, greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
that me?
Yeah, it is.
Well, oh, okay. My guilty pleasure, I spent the break time in reading the latest Bart's top page. Bart's apparently been out playing poker. God bless him for having a little bit of fun. Let's see. There's one thing and one thing only to do, and that is to go to the phones. You, of course, know the number. You stacked them up last night. Maybe that's because I was the only live liberal talk in the world. But the opportunity is there for you again. Four lines open right now if you want to jump in. 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on. On your nickel, 304-658-3333. It is all just that easy. And away we go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey,
Susan, what's up?
Well, I thought I would add a cherry to top your Sunday of, you know, your little Sunday that you're building with the CEO of BP. I thought I'd add a cherry to it.
Oh, do please. I mean, it's bad enough the poor man won't get his new Bentley this year.
Yes, well, this is about a different person, but it's something along the same vein. In the past year, what has come out of Michelle Bachmann's mouth most often as regards to Barack Obama? What word?
Socialist?
Yeah.
Okay.
She is now complaining and objecting to the fact that Barack Obama has not, quote, commandeered ships to go to the Gulf. In other words, she's complaining because he's not a socialist. Say what?
Huh? What? Yeah.
But I say just that. I feel like, you know, like Daffy Duck after somebody's on whipping by him and his head goes whipping around and around and around. You know. That woman is a stink. And here's the ultimate cherry. BP has hired.
Yeah, the Cheney's former spokescreep.
The same people that handled his PR problems after he shot the guy in the face.
Well, I mean, look. At this point, can we at least acknowledge, I mean, I know, and I get it, and I'm part of it, that Barack Obama's response needs to be more somehow than what it is. I don't know what it needs to be. He's not a deep sea diver, and he's damn sure not Aquaman. We'd like for it to be something that apparently we're not getting. Go down and do the King Canute thing and order the tides to reverse themselves. I don't know. But the fact of the matter is, Susan, we've got to acknowledge, or maybe we're just so naive that we are physically incapable of it or intellectually incapable of it, we got to acknowledge that it takes time, you know, that it take a determined administration working hammer and tongs 24/7 like the Bush administration did, it takes time to change bureaucratic cultures. And where we are right now is about the time that you begin to see the effect of that change.
Yeah, here's a goodie. It was posted 6:55 p.m. on the East Coast. BP criminal investigation launched by the feds. Upon Huffington Post listed this breaking news. And needless to say, their stops didn't like it. Which to me is good news right there. As far as I'm concerned, for something like this, a company like BP ought to get the corporate death penalty, revoke their charter.
You know, there's more of that beginning to sort of float up into the blogosphere. Robert Reich has recently called for the federal government to put BP and its U.S. operations into receivership and completely take over the cleanup.
Yeah, and all
to the extent to the extent, with all due respect to Kate, that a cleanup is even possible.
Yeah, and all of those oil leases that they have sold to BP, fine, turn around, sell them to some other oil company.
Just revoke them. Revoke them. They don't have to be sold to somebody else. Revoke them.
Revoke them. Yeah, but my stepson, works for another oil company, Chevron. He's currently in Australia. And he calls his father every week, and he's been telling his father a few little goodies, like BP has been notorious for this for years.
I don't doubt it.
In the exploration community, BP is. They don't want to have anything to do with BP. And these are not exactly God's great, you know, world's greatest angels companies here. Even they don't want to have anything to do with BP. So it's something like the equivalent of Al Capone refusing to have something to have anything to do with these people because they're just really icky.
Yeah, that's one of those complicated scientific terms, icky, right? Yeah.
I think they ought to revoke their charter, freeze their assets, and revoke and yank everything. And what I do not understand, I will never understand, why aren't the CEOs of Chevron and all of these other companies calling press conferences and saying, hey, we have X number of tankers. They're on their way to the Gulf right now. President Obama, they're free of charge. You just use them any way you want. Let us know when you're done.
Yeah, and call. Just drop you. Yeah, pick up the phone.
And, you know, that neatly be, and I know for a fact that they have offered. These companies have offered, you know, through channels, but that channel goes right through BP, and BP has told them go away by calling a press conference. Okay, that bypasses BP.
I know. Well, I'm flummoxed. I'm flustered, Susan. I'm completely at sea with all of this stuff. You know, breaking news over at CNN.com: oil spill. There's that damned word again.
Yeah, I know. It's just, yeah. I like yours, volcano.
I've got an even better one. I got to find it in my email. Our buddy Tom, out in California, sent this along by way of his bright young son's consideration of the issue. But no, breaking news on CNN: oil spill spreads to Mississippi, Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
Damn them! You know, just damn them.
Damn them all. I only have one very, very tiny consolation. Is that sooner or later, when that oil gets, you know, around Florida on the Atlantic side, one of the first beaches it's going to foul is going to be Rush Limbaugh's. Because his house is right on the beach.
Oh, it is. It is. And by the way, that new word, Susan. Mm-hmm. That Tom's son came up with, Chernobyl.
Oh, I like that.
Isn't that nice?
Can I steal it?
Do please steal it, spread it around. You know, just like I'm kind of, you know, a lot of things happen on the fly on this program, and I'm really loving the idea that we need a hard time for oil crime law.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know about where you live. But, you know, we've got a population of young folks with very little in the way of opportunities or hope or anything. Appalachia has a lot in common with Gaza. because, you know, we have a hopeless population here.
Any rural.
And we've got bumper stickers we've got billboards all over creation that say, hard time for gun crime. You know, reminding people that there's going to be an extra 5 years tacked onto their sentence if they're caught stream littering and they have a gun. Or if they're caught illegally ginsenging out of season and they've got a gun. Or, you know, any sort of federal crime and they've got a gun. Hard time for gun crime. By God, you know what we need, Susan? We need hard time for oil crime. Because, again, I return to my thesis of what I said with Jim. There is no deterrent quality whatsoever to the laws of the United States with regard to these corporate betters of ours. That dirty, rotten, filthy son of a bitch, Tony Hayward, to the extent that he enters the territorial confines of the United States, he should be taken under arrest and held. My God, hang a bond on him. Like got hung on those nonviolent protesters in Boone County, West Virginia, for the love of God.
Oh, no, not like that. I want it bigger.
I'd like to see a $10 billion bond for Tony Hayward.
No, I want it equal to the entire worth of the U.S. holdings of BP Corporation.
Now, that's clever.
Yeah. He skips out. They forfeit the entire company. And by the way...
But see, I don't want him skipping. I want him behind bars until trial.
Yeah, you and me both. By the way, maybe I've got a really nasty mind. But during all this, all these little Rube Ginsburg things that they're pulling, you know, supposedly to stop the well. Has it ever occurred to anybody that what they're doing is buying time so that they can strip the American company of all of its assets and get it out of the country?
That's all it is. It's all time buying. And by the way, I think it's Rube Goldberg.
Rube Goldberg, sorry.
That's okay. You had me thinking about a Supreme Court. Ruth Ginsburg? What? Oh, Rube Goldberg. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I just keep thinking, these guys are acting like they're buying time. And the only reason they're buying time is so they can strip as much out of the U.S. as possible and get it out of the country where we can't touch it.
There you go. Susan, great observations.
Yeah,
I appreciate it.
Fine.
Have a great evening, all right?
Give my love to Agnes and the kids.
Sure will. Take care.
Say bye-bye.
Bye now. Is there, you know, we took down Capone for tax evasion. Surely to God, some enterprising U.S. attorney could find some charge by which to arrest and detain Tony Hayward. Hey, look, material witness. You know, there's a provision in the law that calls for the so-called protective custody of a material witness to a major crime. How in the name of sweet Jesus is Tony Hayward not a material witness to a serious crime? Let's hold him for his own protection and take his belt and shoelaces. He's probably damn near suicidal by now by virtue of the fact that he hasn't visited his tailors on Savile Row for a couple of months. Why not? Why not? Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, it's Brian from New Hampshire. If Mr. Hayward begins to sound like, God rest his soul, the great comic actor John Candy, and on the SCTV comedy series back in the 80s there, and his movies there later on, his Johnny LaRue character, Mr. Caballero.
No, yeah, Johnny, yeah, there's that. Yeah, and
I'm going to cut my per diem. Oh, no, you're not going to give my luxury suite to the McKenzie brothers. Oh, no, those two, not the two hosers like that, Mr. Caballero. Oh, please. A great comic actor.
You do that very well, Brian.
Yeah, and my it's a comedy detective movie. I think it's the funniest comedy detective movie ever made. Is Who's Harry Crumb, starring John Candy. It's a great. He died far too soon in March 1994. John Candy, a great comic actor. He played the Dean Andrews character. You know, the corrupt lawyer there in the JFK movie. The New Orleans corrupt lawyer there. It was New Clay Shaw. And apparently Clay Shaw tried to get Oswald's discharge from the Marine Corps upgraded and may have...
I remember.
Dean Andrews just after the assassination for legal advice for Oswald. Just, you know, just a few hours, those many hours of grilling of Oswald and the interviews of Oswald where they have absolutely no record of it. And before they killed him, of course, on that following Sunday after that fateful Friday, November 22nd. But talking about, yeah, I went back over the, you know, the Israeli incident there with the boat there, and I'm going over the Center for Defense Information and other sites I've gone to about the fact is the Turkish military and economic trading partnership with Israel is far too entrenched that there's not going to be any real war between these two nations over this. There may be a lot of blustering, but there's not going to be any. You know, I can't imagine there's going to be any kind of war. The Merkava tank there for the Israeli army, it's a mainstay. Mostly it's made in the Republic of Turkey. Turkey has huge economic cards they can play with that and other economic and military infrastructure cards they can play against the Israelis and maybe bring them further into line. And since we have a spineless American so-called executive branch there right now, that it's so evocative in what's going on in the Gulf of Mexico that maybe that's needed, and that the Turks have been known to do that for the going back to the ancient history where they come from, the going back to the ancient Hittites and the ancient Celtic peoples there and the ancient Greek peoples there in what is now Asia Minor and the Republic of Turkey it is now, but all the ancient peoples there, that's where politics was born, at least that would influence the later European and
what I find, you know, what I find interesting, Brian, is the statement from Tayyip Erdogan, the Prime Minister of Turkey, saying Israel must be punished.
Yeah, so I mean there could be skirmishes over there. There could definitely be. They could step up military aid to Syria, especially logistically. Their radon, they have a huge border, the southern border of Turkey and the northern border with Syria. But also that the fact is for the helicopters and these things, these logistics and military supplies that have also they've upgraded the Turkish army through their interaction with the Israeli defense forces there. They helped them even more so, I think, perhaps even more so than America post the Cold War period. And now that they need that upgraded military hardware to suppress the Kurds there in southern Turkey, the Kurdish uprising is always just a moment away, or it's always partly in place there, and it's like in northern Iraq, where we know about the Kurdish population there, it's probably the only democratic part of Iraq that's ever been, and we've never really invaded there either. That might be one of the reasons Iraqi Kurdistan may be one of the few democracies Israel used.
But remember, that's the chunk of Iraq where they, doing the story a couple of years back, Brian, that's that part of Iraq where they do the sickening, brutal female genital mutilation.
Oh, that part is that women's rights are not and with the so-called concern of for women's rights, whether it's Laura Bush or Hillary Clinton for in places like Afghanistan, they have the latest story there. American female GIs are going out to the Afghan villages because the Taliban influence and just the conservative Islamic influence is everywhere there. They won't allow them any American male soldiers, of course, they try to keep them from entering any Afghan household there, even on the smallest village level there. But that's not going to really win over any permanent victory, quote-unquote, in Afghanistan. It goes back to the same madness there. I guess we're like the Anglo-American power we've taken over. It's going back to at least the British and the Sepoy Rebellion of the British Raj and Indian Empire back in the mid-19th century there. And, you know, just many civilians died needlessly in that rebellion, too, to try to suppress that. But just the nationalism is what is not being addressed. And I believe the Afghans themselves have to sort that out. Our military presence there is only an irritant. And it could be a lot more useful, our National Guard or whatever forces that are over there, it could be now for using for the cleanup in the Gulf of Mexico is where they're much more needed for our real national security, for God's sakes. Oh, can you hear me, Bob?
I got you fine.
Oh, okay. Just what I was talking about, what Jim was talking about earlier, too, I think he's at the Center for Defense Information there. He's brought up the salient point there. We have the May 11th report there, the Strauss Military Reform Project, the sorry state of congressional oversight, May 11th of this year, and it brings up a book there by Arthur Schlesinger, Congress Investigates 1792 to 1974, by Schlesinger and another historian, Roger Burns. He covers 16 major congressional investigations spanning from a now obscure defeat of an anti-Indian expedition, 1792, St. Clair's defeat. I believe that was the largest defeat led by Arthur St. Clair, then the governor of the Northwest Territory, mostly was Ohio and those areas at that time in American history. And they were defeated by the Miami Indians. A Little Turtle led his warriors against the Americans November 4th, 1791, I believe it was. They just were horribly defeated, and many his soldiers that deserted, the militiamen that he had and the regular soldiers tried to fight it out, but the ground was literally covered with the dead. The Indians had soundly defeated St. Clair's army, and then President George Washington demanded that St. Clair resign from the army. St. Clair did so April 7, 1792, but he also remained governor of the Northwest Territory. He was replaced eventually by General Anthony Wayne, and eventually Wayne did defeat the Native Americans, the Indians, at the Battle of Fallen Timbers, August 1794. And most natives in 1795, most Native Americans had to give up most of modern-day Ohio except for a northwest corner of it, the state there. So even when they win a great victory there, the Native Americans,
there was no such thing as winning.
Yeah.
The thing that probably with regard to that time period has most affected my thinking and sort of most turned on its ear my idea, because, you know, we recognize these people were flawed men, people like Jefferson, you know, Washington owning slaves, all of that, and yet talking about equality in the eyes of the yada yada. The thing that has changed my perspective the most is that quote that Jeff Biggers dug up in Reckoning at Eagle Creek, wherein Thomas Jefferson lays out an actual plan for dispossessing Native peoples from their land by debt slavery and by addiction to alcohol.
Right.
I mean, Jefferson did some heinous things, and you know his vicious little vendetta against Aaron Burr is a perpetual stain upon him. But to read that, and because you find yourself not wanting to judge a man by one sentence or one paragraph.
No.
But you know this is the same guy who sent out the Lewis and Clark expedition and said don't shoot at the natives. And yet, at virtually the same time, he's coming up, hey, you know what? If we get the Indians liquored up, we can get them off that coal land.
Yeah, that's very much Byzantine, that way of reasoning, which is not a way of reasoning at all. It's an illogical way. If it's a schizoid way of reasoning things out. And the fact is, that's like the uncontrolled corporate power that's been allowed to do what it's still doing, the ongoing mass death in the Gulf there. Gulf of Mexico, it's the same thing. The fact is, like the Native Americans, and in some cases, they were so impoverished they had nothing to turn to, but, the alcohol was having an effect on their culture, their great culture, and it's like America today, under the Republicans and the corporate media, is our addiction apparently is still the lies on television and the phony news on television, which could be called a latter day, I think of, was it the song by U2 there about the opium addiction and heroin addiction there, but the needle chill there that Bono sings about, but I think you could be turning on a TV and have the same kind of effect that we're in. And maybe it does, even though I don't have cable TV, I have the computer, and maybe I'm so, I want to get that rapid eye motion fix or whatever it is from a computer screen. Maybe, and it's something that I only can understand subconsciously at this point. But the fact is, he Schlesinger in his book, the 16 major congressional investigations in this book, Congress Investigates 1792 to 1974, he does bring up, it's mostly their unwillingness to really investigate the wrongdoings of corporate power in America, of corrupt powerful politicians, and continued, of course, in the Iran-Contra hearings after that, and the October surprise, the phony investigation, the September 11th attacks, phony investigation there, and of course the killing of Kennedy in 63. But he does have one bright spot in all of this was he goes on to say the grossly incompetent, meddlesome, and revoltingly politically driven, and the rare exercises in seriousness in these investigations by Congress broken by remarkable World War II Truman Commission, and it's described in details. The details, the lessons belie the marked congressional foolishness, and all you need to do to understand something is to convene a few senators at a hearing and ask a few questions after you've read a staff memo. And that's not enough. You need the energy of a – Harry Truman was a – you know, it's not just George W. Bush that has that had that style. He just had the style. He was a total corporate whore. No offense to sex workers, like Uncle Mike Malloy says it. But Harry Truman was a real anti-corporate power, real political leader there, like Abraham Lincoln in the late 19th century, like Teddy Roosevelt there in the early 20th century against the robber barons there. He cracked down on them, and he spoke out for a living wage. The fact is, Harry Truman's World War II commission, it did do a lot of, they did actually send people to jail, Bob, for the war profiteering in World War II, which was supposed to be, you know.
Yeah, no, we did take some of that stuff seriously. Remember, and yeah. as you being in New Hampshire know full well, remember that that the Bush family was popped, Poppy Bush, no, not yeah. Poppy, Prescott. Prescott was popped for the Trading with the Enemy Act in 1943.
That's right.
Most people don't realize it. One of the things that he ran on, Brian, was that George H.W. Bush was the youngest pilot in Navy history when he entered the Navy during the Second World War. Well, the reason he had to be hustled into some sort of high visibility position was because his daddy had gotten busted for doing business with Nazis.
Right. And that
and George H.W. Bush was a terrible pilot.
And that was ongoing from, that's right. And his father's dealing, Prescott's dealing with the Nazis was ongoing into at least the early 1950s. And he profited the Bush family. I still say that they could find the logical paper trail still today, like Mr. John Buchanan did at the National Archives there, that shows that they profited from the slave and death camp labor of the Nazis going up, into the 40s and into the early 50s there, the Swiss bank accounts and all that, too, where even Truman's commissions could not get to that in our own World War II. We remained angry for at least a few years after World War II about the horrible evil we had seen in Nazi Europe and Nazi Germany, and so we kept after them, and so that the maybe, you know, it's at some extent, to some extent, maybe they got back some of those unearned evil profits there for the Bush crime family, the Union Banking Corporation, Thyssen Steel, just the massive death that they used. Was a part of it went into Hitler's rocket V1 and V2 rocket programs there, the slave labor that was used to make that synthetic oil. Again, it's the oil, the fossil fuel there. We're such a primitive species there. But there is hope. I'm going by. I've gone back over. You know, I don't have time for my more flowery quotes from it. But a great book there, How the Irish Saved Civilization by Thomas Cahill, The Untold Story of Ireland's Heroic Rule from the Fall of Rome to the Rise of Medieval Europe.
I'm well familiar with it. Yeah.
Yeah, and it talks about, you know, St. Patrick was a Romano-Celtic.
He was a Briton.
Who was captured by the Irish. Raiders there enslaved him and took him into Ireland for slave as their slaves. But in at that time, early 5th century A.D., Ireland and England, too, the Celtic parts of it, and other parts, too, the barbaric peoples there, I know the Irish Celtic peoples, they were still practicing human sacrifice. And this will be the people that would save and preserve eventually Western civilization.
You know, but I got to tell you, I've read the Cahill book too, Brian.
Yeah.
And I'm suspicious of that still practicing human sacrifice thing, because that wherever the Catholic Church became
that's where St. Patrick comes in. Yeah.
Well, no, right, and wherever the Catholic Church first arises within another pre-existing local tradition, one of the first bugaboos that they hauled out is, oh, they were practicing human sacrifice.
Okay.
Yeah. And in fact, for instance, the native peoples of the Valley of Mexico clearly practiced human sacrifice, but that wasn't enough for the Catholic hierarchy. They had to inflate it. So somebody gets taken up, they get laid over the stone, they're whacked out of their mind on drugs, and they go immediately to Teotihuacan, the Mexica Valhalla. But by the time the Spaniards get done with it, they're writing stories about how the Mexica dedicated their temple plaza by sacrificing 28,000 people in one day.
Right.
It's mathematically impossible.
Right. Well, in the book here, it's naturally with a title like this, the book is an overview. He talks about St. Patrick's adventures in the Irish dream world must have reached their crucial moment when he faced the phenomenon of human sacrifice. All early people sacrificed human beings. One only has to remember Agamemnon sacrificed the angry Artemis. The most beautiful thing he possessed, his own daughter Iphigenia. It goes on from there. But the fact is, and he talks about the early Jews too. Abraham said he no longer needed to sacrifice his son. He could sacrifice a ram in place of Abraham's son to their God, and that was an important movement forward. So that part of it, but it goes it talks about that there's a complex history of religious and spiritual feeling to the human sacrifice, whether it's of fellow human beings or of animals. That kind of, there's a complex spirituality going on there, and then some of that was carried forward, like into the Roman Church that became the Roman Catholic Church there. The pagan rites and those kind of things remained in the Catholic Church there, but the fact is that they talk about the what they've uncovered, and this gets to my larger point there, Bob, of what we need to do to reform the media, is the prehistoric corpses that they found in I believe it's west of England there, of Toland man, Grabal man, Boromos man, that they were dug out of Danish bogs.
Yeah, I thought Toland man was Danish, yeah.
Yeah, but the Danish, but they may really be Celtic bodies there.
Oh, they are. There's no doubt that they're Celtic.
Yeah. They were found in south of Manchester. Manchester's a Celtic word, of course, and it may well be Irish. Because of the peat moss that is there.
Actually, if I could just throw out a geeky little correction there, Brian.
That are there,
Brian. Any English town name that ends in Chester, is actually Latinate.
Okay, but Manchester is the origination of the word. It was. I can't spell it in the Gaelic, but the original word was that's a Latinized word of the original Celtic word, which I forget the name of it.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Any English place name that ends in Chester, is an anglicization of the Latin word castra, which means camp.
Camp. Okay, that makes
for instance
sense.
The Latin idiom for to pitch camp, like an army pitches camp, is castra pono. And so whether it be Manchester or Winchester, that Chester all goes back to the Latinate camp.
Right, but they're saying Manchester was originally a huge Celtic settlement.
Oh, yeah. Well, they were all over the island. Ireland, certainly. Yes, absolutely.
But what they're saying, that's what I want to get to, Bob, is that the fact that peat bogs that are there, that are all over the west of England, especially, that's what preserved those bodies and those remains. And that's what gets me to the point there, the way that... you know, we can way American media, even maybe it was only late night radio, but they used to be able to ruminate on such historical things. They had something called the Long John Nebel Show out of WOR New York City in the late 50s or early 60s and beyond. He had a lot of UFO guests. He had a guy, Andy Sinatra, there, the mystic barber of Brooklyn there, Andy Sinatra, who was a phony mystic, and he could read minds. He had the third eye. He taped that phony eye to the middle eye there, and he was like a mystic, and he had all these different characters who had been abducted allegedly by aliens. But he also had people like Arthur C. Clarke, the great person, you know, wrote 2001, great. He had great scientists and physicists and thinkers on his show at the same time, and they would ruminate because they had the time, maybe on late night radio, to do so. He had Ivan T. Sanderson. He was, I believe, was an English anthropologist and historian and archaeologist, and he spoke about the natural. He uncovers the many natural archaeological sites and bogs and the healing powers of these ancient bogs in England there that go back to the Celtic peoples, then the Romans, then the Anglo-Saxons, and then the Danelaw and all the other invaders that followed that made up that great and fabled island that continues to this day. Like I say, I don't consider it British Petroleum that's committed this great crime. It's nothing against the great British people there, the great Celtic Germanic people, Roman people. of today's United Kingdom, British Isles, whatever you want to call it, they're just like invading aliens. This guy, that guy is a, like I say, I compare him to Johnny LaRue. He's a monster, a profiteering monster who's got to be brought into line there. This guy's got to become like Harry Truman, much more than Barack Obama. But the fact is, the radio used to be, when it used to be that really the people's radio, Bob, they had things like Long John Neville, and people could ruminate and dream about things, about life on other planets, and they could, Arthur C. Clarke and others, they could bring up that it was, they may not be like the character in the Klaatu in the Day that the Earth Stood Still you were just talking about. They may not be as such benign beings there. They may try to invade us and use us the way we've used third world great peoples there and their natural resources and their riches. And they may try to just do the same to us, but they would. You could ruminate about these kind of things. It was far less commercialized. Today's Art Bell Show and that George Norrie, that they're so interrupted by ads for gold and ads for this or that. Come on, that they're nothing like. You know, the closest thing we have to Long John Nebel, of course, is somebody named Bob Kincaid, or maybe at times Mike Malloy, and people like that. And we don't have that any longer. And just you know. The fact is, and we're not allowed to be individuals anymore. That's the great character that was Harry Truman is what is needed now. And I still say it's possible that that kind of a character can come up into Barack Obama. At this point, at least, it's not, if this spill, this oil volcano had happened with President McCain and Palin, dear God, they would, it would be so much worse, I would say, than what it is now. Even that, just he's got to crack down on them, yes. But he's far saner than the leadership we've had for the last 8 years preceding President Obama. We at least have that. I think he can really, he can change his way there. He talked about that he's going to crack down on a real legal case against. You know, and that's a Harvard Law School trained person. That it may be the one way they know to be tough with somebody is throwing them eventually in jail, in prison, perhaps. That's what's needed. This bastard there at BP. But the fact is, it's not as hopeless. Like I say, this book here, the cannibalistic Irish became the saviors, or they have many of the great books of Western civilization there, and not in Christianity, but ancient works as well. There during the darkest years of the Dark Ages, and these were people that I'm going by just the book by Mr. K. Earlier, that they had participated in human sacrifice and paganism, and before St. Patrick, he eventually, I guess, he kind of enslaved.
Well, you know, you talk and you do so very very well in very well informed fashion, Brian, about the shift in radio. The fact of the matter is, you mentioned Art Bell, George Norrie, and those guys are sort of harmless idiots, you know?
They are idiots. I mean, John.
But you want to get dangerous. You want to get dangerous. The guy that occupies the lunatic chair of Father Coughlin, even beyond Glenn Beck, is Alex Jones.
Now, no, I know that. Oh, he's
that guy is a hustler and a huckster. And in fact, the reason I bring up the topic is because if you recall a couple of weeks back when Rand Paul became only the third human being in history to bail out on a Meet the Press interview.
Right.
Remember that?
Yeah.
He joined that triumvirate of Louis Farrakhan and. Oh God! Who was the other one?
David Duke, or
Someone equally, you know, idiotic. Yeah. But anyway, I know who it was. It was Bandar Bush, Prince Bandar.
That's right. It was.
But Wait. My turn.
Go ahead.
So when Rand Paul bails out on that, guess where he goes instead?
Alex Jones.
Well, not directly. You may recall I played a clip last week of Rand Paul waxing right wing racist and lunatic about civil rights laws and the like, and about the need to overturn the 14th Amendment so that we can't have no more anchor babies. That interview was given
a critical bastard. Yeah.
Yeah, that interview was given to Russian television, and there is. He went, so instead of, literally, Brian, instead of going on, Meet the Prostitutes, and you know, it's nothing but softballs over there, you know, out of the park, every pitch.
Oh, yeah.
Unless you're, you know, liberal or Democrat or sane, in which case, you know, by God, they'll bear down. Instead of going on Meet the Prostitutes, Rand Paul crossed the Atlantic Ocean. Or maybe he didn't cross the Atlantic Ocean. But at any rate, he gave an interview to this RTV or RT or whatever, which is a house organ of the Russian state that's made to look all shiny and sparkly like CNN and Al Jazeera.
You mean it's the state-run Russian big government-run media outlet there? That's where Rand Paul fled to.
Yes.
The libertarian fled to there. This is the same thing. This Alex Jones is such another.
And that's where Alex Jones comes in. Alex Jones is a regular contributor to that same house organ news network.
Yeah, and these are some of the same September 11th attacks truth seekers there. The Ron Paul Sr., the father of this Rand Paul brat, he blew them off, and he said they're just a bunch of nuts there. They're in 2007, 2008 campaign there. He would say anything to get to keep the military-industrial complex and the American empire fully funded there. If Ron Paul did say that private contractors, you know, the taxpayer gouging private contractors, phony private contractors, like KBR and Custer Battles and Khaki and Blackwater in Iraq, they were the free market solution to the Iraq war. That's what Ron Paul said, 2007, 2008, up here in New Hampshire. He'd say anything to get. And this is the phony constitutionalist that Alex Jones is always advertising. Ron Paul, his fellow congressman, Denny Kucinich, the true American, true progressive patriot, his 35 articles of impeachment against George W. Bush, his fellow congressman Ron Paul refused to sign on to those articles of impeachment. He was scared to death. He's still scared to death of the Bush crime family. This phony revolutionary Ron Paul Sr. and his brat son there, you're so right, Bob, where is Long John Neville when you need him? Well, the closest thing we have is named Bob Kincaid, and there's Michael Malloy, Michael Dennis Malloy there. He's the father of secular American greatness, that we can get back to it. But I feel a lot like your first caller there, Jim. I wonder what we can do. I feel myself reeling at these bastards there. But I know that there still is hope, and that needs to be backed up by action, though. You're right about that. Barack Obama's rhetoric is not enough in this situation there. They've got to cap this monster in the Gulf of Mexico. It's a real monster. It's not a sci-fi movie. It's not a
Brian, just answer me this. Yeah. Answer me this. Okay. Why is it that people like Malloy, me, the little handful of liberal talkers are. Why are we the only ones who are asking why it is that BP is still allowed to contemplate profit in the so-called solution to this seemingly, I mean, if you listen to Kate's email earlier, insoluble problem? I mean, Kate is apparently convinced that this is literally the end of humanity.
She could be right if they.
And she could be right, exactly.
Like this, for God's sakes.
Because as I noted last night, this thing, the BP Horizon nightmare, did not happen to a healthy planet.
No, absolutely not. Mother Earth is in pain and is angry at us. You know, it gets back to, you know, maybe we need maybe the patriarchal societies that we're just, maybe we need to switch over immediately to a matriarchal culture. And that would be a part of the thing. That's our Native Americans. One of your callers last night alluded to it, that they're so much more in touch with that Mother Earth matriarchal culture there. That's a powerful force. You know, and when the Nazis invaded Russia in World War II, that Stalin only really had brought the Russian people to his side in the counteroffensives against Hitler's demons when they brought up the great patriotic war and the Russian Orthodox priests were released again and other Islamic holy men were released from the concentration camps by Stalin, and the Mother Russia concept was brought up, the great patriotic war, and the Nazis didn't stand a chance against that. They did not stand a chance against that Slavic and Turkic stubbornness eventually overcame them. And like I said, Winston Churchill himself said that, especially around 1942, the war against the Nazis was being fought with English words. Now, you know, he was the great practitioner of American money and Russian blood. And that's you know, that's the thing, the human tradition, the so-called Untermenschen there, that the Nazis, and when they invaded
that Untermenschen thing. I was thinking about that concept itself earlier today, because that Untermenschen concept has transferred itself to the state of Israel.
Yeah.
I was looking, not to transition on you in the middle of your call, but this thing that I saw earlier, it was the headline, and a couple of you sent it in to me. Israeli officials and American conservatives claim, quote, there is no humanitarian crisis in Gaza. And you have to understand, and it galls me to say it, Brian, but that's true. To them, there is no humanitarian crisis in Gaza, because in order for there to be a humanitarian crisis in Gaza, you would first have to view the people in Gaza as human.
Right.
And the entirety of the Palestinian people are, for the Israeli government, and especially its disgusting, hard, right-wing, proto-fascist crowd like Benjamin Netanyahu and Ehud Barak, they are Untermenschen. The entirety of the Palestinian people are Untermenschen. And they took no lessons from the Holocaust for themselves, but rather took its methods and finessed them and made them a little finer and a little bit cleaner and a little bit prettier, so that the cuts would be a little more precise and not quite so jagged and ragged and bloody. But it's the same damn thing. Hey, Brian, I got a roll here, but
you have a good night, sir. Hang in there, buddy.
I am trying.
Okay, you have a good night, sir.
Take care, Brian. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
That's our buddy Brian calling from New Hampshire. Seriously, check these quotes out. Israeli Foreign Minister Avigdor Lieberman. There is no humanitarian crisis. I'm not even going to do an accent. There is no humanitarian crisis in Gaza. The flotilla is an attempt at violent propaganda against Israel, and Israel will not allow the violation of its sovereignty at sea, in the air, or on land. Implicit in that statement is the notion that Israel is a sovereign law unto itself on all the world's seas. Because remember, that flotilla was in international waters. An attempt at violent propaganda. How dare they, how dare those peace activists keep leaping in front of our bullets? When the Israeli foreign minister says there is no humanitarian crisis in Gaza, you understand first and foremost that the people in Gaza are
to Avigdor Lieberman, not human. The Israeli ambassador to the United States, Michael Oren, over 100 trucks every day laden with food and medicine go into Gaza. There's no shortage of food. There's no shortage of medicine. And implicit in that is, trust me, would I lie? But you see, Gaza doesn't belong to Israel. That is the bottom line with all of this. This notion that Gazans and Palestinians in general have no right whatsoever to self-determination. You know, the whole we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all people were created equal, that they were endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Declaration of Independence stuff. That does not apply to things that are not human. And Palestinians are not human to the state of Israel. Not the people. Not the Jewish people. Not practitioners of that faith. Not members of that ethnicity, but to that proto-fascist state. Then there's Newt Gingrich. There was no humanitarian crisis. This was a deliberate political effort on the part of people who want to try to undermine the survival of Israel. Again, because Palestinians and Arabs in general are not human to Newt Gingrich. Then there's Charles, sadly named Krauthammer. What exactly is the humanitarian crisis that the flotilla was actually addressing? There is none. No one is starving in Gaza. So the benchmark standard of human rights for Charles Krauthammer, if you happen to be Palestinian, if you happen to perhaps be of Arabic extraction, is that you're not starving. Hey, did that kid get a bowl of gruel today? Then there's no crisis. God, I remember the great, come on, Supertramp album. Crisis? What crisis? William the Bloody Crystal said, they can get plenty of humanitarian aid in Gaza if they want more aid. Airlift in 5 million tons of nice goods, and the Israelis will just take a look and make sure they're not arms. See, that's the problem. The Israelis have no right to make that inspection. Gaza is not Israel in any sense of the word. They have no right to demand to inspect squat. But that's where we are. It's not a humanitarian crisis if the people suffering aren't humans. But before you think it's just right-wingers, well, we'll come back and take a look at this. It's our side, too. Like I said, this is a third rail. This is, honest to God, a third rail for so-called liberals, because we lose our minds in the what should be trivial issue of Israel in the world. You know, the pro-Israeli crowd likes, well, it's only the size of New Jersey. Well, Jesus, then what's the size of Gaza? It ain't even Rhode Island. It should be trivial. The fact that Israel is anything other than trivial in the United States is indicative of nothing more than the fact that many facets of Christian so-called Christian America fetishize and masturbate over Israel for the day when they get to move in and Jesus tells them, kill the Jews who won't confess me. They're aching for that day. They're yearning for that day. Blood drips freely from the fangs of Pastor Hagee for that day, and Jack Van Impe, and Hal Lindsey, and all that murderous, filthy, disgusting, homicidal, genocidal crowd. But see, they need the Palestinians got out of the way first, because the entirety of the state of Israel has to be reserved for the entirety of the world's Jewish people. Pastor Hagee wants every Jew in the United States sent to Israel because he wants to make it nice and convenient for Jesus when he tells Pastor Hagee to start putting them to the sword. Don't want to have to be hunting them down now. That's the millennialist eschatology of the weirdo right wing that has most of American Christianity by the throat. Just, you know, worth remembering. Just worth remembering. So we'll take a little break and we'll come back with your calls. You know the number 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. 304-658-3333 on your nickel. This is America's listener-supported, emphasis on listener-supported, liberal voice. This is The Horn.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins next. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
17 minutes past the hour. That gives us about, 18 minutes of good conversation remaining in the program. And here's hoping. Okay, here's the rules, guys. This is conversation radio. Sometimes you have to sit on hold. You guys will stay on hold for Malloy for 3 flipping hours. Come on. Cut me a little slack here. I kid. I love you, you know. 18 minutes past the hour. And let's see what we got. Kill that first, Bob. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob.
Yes.
Oh, it's Margaret from Asheville.
Hey, Margaret. How are you, dear?
Oh, I'm on some levels okay. On other levels, I'm spitting nuclear bullets. I don't know what to say. You know, Israel, the only importance of that location geographically on the planet, when you look at a map, it's downwind from the Middle East.
Yeah, downwind from the big countries, right.
Yeah. And it is on a pretty large sea, the Mediterranean Sea. So, you know, it stands to reason, if you're looking at it from this warmongering corporate militarization of the world, why we are their pansies and why all so much of our tax money goes to arm them, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, Margaret, let me throw in one other observation as we proceed down this path, if I may, please.
Okay.
The only way that Israel can matter more than, say, Borneo is if there is a religious fixation associated with it. Now, you know,
wait a minute. What about money? Isn't that more important than religious propaganda?
No, it's not, because there's money to, you know, the corporate world, the transnationals have proven they will go anywhere for a buck. There's nothing especially lucrative about Israel. Pardon?
And the leaders, the Zionist leaders of the Jewish, I mean, you know, I've got a lot of blanks in my own history, but
There is nothing especially lucrative about Israel. Nothing.
Well, except for location.
Location, you know. There's Lebanon, and there's Gaza on down south toward Egypt. The location imparts no particular benefit.
Well, a part of the Cheney energy plan, as it bits and pieces is all that's come out, but part of it, when you look at that map, was they really wanted to put an oil line to be able to offload oil through Israel. Into boats on the Mediterranean. That was part of this massive plan and part of the reason.
Right, but Margaret, I still submit that's just a wrinkle, because we're doing fine without it. The fact is that the only reason for the religious fixation, or for the fixation with Israel, is religion. Pure and simple. Because otherwise, Israel was created out of the ashes of the Second World War, and to a certain extent the ashes of the First World War,
right?
With the Balfour Declaration and all of that stuff.
Yeah.
The one of the best pieces on the Western fetishization of the Jewish people, and I mean that in no negative terms. It's kind of shameful, Barbara Tuchman's, who was a great historian, wrote The Guns of August, Distant Mirror, stuff like that.
Yeah.
She wrote a book called Bible and Sword. It's one of her lesser known books. It is Bible and Sword.
Okay.
And it lays out in very simple to grasp terms the religious fetishization of the Jewish people by Western Europe. It's really one of the most unhealthy, one of the most dysfunctional relationships in the history of humanity. Because on the one hand, Europe likes to blame the Jews. What's that? Your continent is being destroyed by a disease? Blame the Jews. Oh, the Jews poisoned the well. Oh, the Jews are kidnapping babies and using baby blood to make matzah. Let's kill Jews. But on the other hand, there's this dichotomy that arises out of the fact that the book that Western Europe appropriated for its in place of its own religious culture is the Jews' book. They wrote it. It's theirs. It belongs to them. And then Western Europe appropriates it and turns around and starts reinterpreting it in ways that even the Jewish people don't want anything to do with. And that's why I say that, you know, this topic is such a little grenade with the pin out for me, because I have so much, you know, I'm steeped in history, and I love ancient history, and I'm absolutely adore the human struggle to rise up beyond our bloody nature.
Yeah.
And if you read the Old Testament, you know, I take the view that the Old Testament is not tales of people to be deified or worshipped, but rather cautionary tales. And I could tick off a dozen of them just off the top of my head. You know, look at Abraham going down into Egypt and pimping his own wife to Pharaoh as his sister. Oh, yeah, bang my sister. Isn't she lovely?
Yeah.
And then Pharaoh finds out and hauls Abraham before him and says, "What the hell are you doing?" You know, that's not a guy to emulate. And I think the Old Testament makes it clear. Then you get Joseph. And Joseph tortures his brothers and threatens them with death, all to work off a nasty little vendetta. And the way I read it, it's warning us against behaving that way.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I hear
that. But yet Western Europe appropriated these people, turned them into the ancient superheroes. And the next thing you know, you've got myths on the Isle of Britain about Joseph Arimathea bringing a piece of the true cross and yada yada yada.
Yeah,
And there is and the United States, you know, the entire religion industry in this country, Margaret, exists in part. Especially since the Darbyite rise of millennialist eschatology exists to proclaim the end of the world and work for it actively. I mean, Texas Betsy, who is our resident Hebrew scholar, horn Jewish mom, etc., could tell us a lot more. But, you know, there are prophecies about the end of times and the return of the temple and yada, yada, yada.
Oh, yeah.
In which, for instance, there's stuff involving red heifers, a pure red heifer. Whatever that means. I feel like Daffy Duck just saying, red heifer. pure red heifer. That or Sylvester the cat. But anyway, so guess what? There's an American Christian so-called religion industry group that funded genetic experimentation to create a genetically modified pure red heifer.
Right.
Because we're going to, you know, it's not, you know, we don't have the patience, Margaret, to wait for old Jesus to come down from the clouds in his holy golden rolls. No, we're going to drag his ass kicking and screaming out of the clouds and get him down here so he can set us loose killing us some Jews.
God, it's amazing. You know, it's just dumbfoundingly ignorant.
Yeah, it is. But you can't, you know, ethnically and culturally speaking, I understand the fascination of the world's Jewish population with a Jewish homeland, Israel. I understand it. Personally, why it couldn't be in Baja California, I don't know. Or a little island in the middle of the Pacific where nobody could ever get to them and bother them again. I don't know. But it had to be right there. And in order to put it right there, we had to create hell on earth for a whole lot of other people. And So, but I understand it from an ethnic or a religious standpoint. I understand it. I sympathize with it. And so when I criticize the conduct of Israel, I'm not criticizing Jewry. I'm not criticizing Jewish people. I'm not criticizing the ethnicity or the religiousness.
No, I'm not either.
I'm criticizing a state run out of control in absolute national security paranoia. I mean, look,
yeah.
Anybody with a working understanding of Gandhi.
Isn't that what a guilty conscience does?
Kinda. You know, look, anybody with a working knowledge, Margaret, of Gandhi, for instance, knows that when you beat up the people who aren't trying to hurt anybody, you lose. Now, this flotilla had been inspected, its cargo inspected, everything, before it ever left port. But the Israelis are so paranoid, and they take this sense of ownership over the human flesh of Palestinian people so seriously. You know, there really is a direct correlation between the relationship between the Israelis and the Palestinians and the Spartans and the Helots. There really is. That they couldn't just let... You know what would have happened if that flotilla had gone in? The peace activists would have said, woohoo, we broke the blockade, yay, food, medicine. And there wouldn't have been a rain of rocketry into the Israel to celebrate unguided rockets packed with ball bearings and such like. No. That wouldn't have happened at all. Israel has a vested interest in keeping Hamas as a boogeyman. Israel has a vested interest in keeping the Palestinian people beaten down and whipped up.
Well,
because the more that they are like that, the easier it is to kill them.
Well, and that's no different than, you know, our boogeyman, I'm tired of saying we the people, when it doesn't include these psychopaths, such as Netanyahu and Cheney. I think they're brothers, frankly. I was dumbfounded they reelected Netanyahu, considering his propensities. But, you know, our boogeyman is Al-Qaeda, who our CIA and our tax money actually gave birth to.
Yeah.
So we have this, you know, and you know, I actually over the weekend was thinking, how many wars has America been whether we started them or joined them or whatever else, in all of our history, how many? And I realized I didn't have time to sit down and go through all the research to find out. But at the same time, it's like war. That's always the answer. And that was, my father was a military man, and I was actually born on his 27th birthday, and I was his nemesis because his answer was, it's the survival of the fittest, and war is the answer. And my answer was, no, absolutely not. So for a long time we didn't get along because of that. But this, what is this reverence?
I referenced Daffy Duck and Sylvester the Cat a little bit ago.
Yeah.
We really are trapped in a Warner.
No, everybody.
We're trapped in a Warner Brothers cartoon, Margaret, because we see the alternatives as nothing. The only alternatives we see is, do we shoot him now or take him home and shoot him later?
Yeah.
When we don't have to shoot him at all.
Exactly.
I mean, honest to God, what would have, this is a question that I've posed to myself repeatedly, what would have happened had those boatloads of civilian materials that were not war materials, what would have happened if they'd gone through? What would have happened?
Yeah.
Nothing would have happened.
No.
You know, the peace activists would have declared victory and gone home. But the thing is, the peace activists could count on, like clockwork, Israel responding in the paranoid fashion that it did. But like I said, it's not just the wingnuts, Margaret, that are a problem. Nancy Pelosi, the House Speaker, was asked today about it.
I've been away from home today, so I didn't hear what she said. What did she say?
Think Progress asked her, do you think the blockade of Gaza should be lifted because it's causing undue suffering on the people in the region? Wow. That's an easy one, right?
Yeah.
Not for her.
No, she's...
I don't want to go into a discussion of the blockade of Gaza. I hope that we can end that by having a resolution in terms of Middle East peace. That's where we spend our time, not necessarily on one particular tactics of one country or the next, but on the bigger picture, which is we must have peace in the Middle East. It must respect both sides. It must have a two-state solution. I emphasize the solution part of it so that both sides feel respected and well-treated and safe as they go forward with the new peace agreement. And I hope that whatever actions are taken on both sides, it's in furtherance of that peace. Wow, that's a lot of words for no answer.
Well, they're very good at that up there, you know. I mean, that
earlier, before that question was put to her, she said, well, first of all, this incident, as you mentioned, is very recent. That. Yeah, it's definitely an incident. It's definitely an incident, and it's recent. That makes it a recent incident.
Well, oh, it's, you know, incident, spill, what's the difference?
Yeah, there's a very strong interest in getting the facts and a transparent and credible investigation is what people are calling for. That's what the White House has mentioned, and that's what I support as well. I didn't get a harumph out of that guy. We have to have the facts on which to make a judgment about how we go forward. I don't know. I appreciate what you're saying, that people are suffering from different physical challenges because of the blockade. I don't know that. I know blockades have consequences. You know, and this is the portion of the program where, once again, I have to restrain myself in my chair, Margaret, to keep from running naked into the yard screaming and tearing at my hair.
I know. I hear you. I understand. I know. It's like every day I wait for something because something, it is so intense right now. And I, amongst many other things I do in my life or have done in my life, I am a student of astrology for 40 years. Led to me because the Catholic Church told me I couldn't even mention the word. And I went, why? Why not? You know.
Oh, so it's demonic. It's demonic.
Yeah, right. Exactly. But anyway, having been that, I understand a lot of the energies that are going on right now, and they are going to intensify. So I'm not being blown out of my seat by anything that's coming up. Except I did have a shudder when I got home and turned the computer on and was going through, and I saw this headline, energy expert, colon, nuking oil leak, only thing we can do.
Energy expert, nail, only thing we can do is hammer it.
Yeah. Now, so I went back to find something I had gotten early on this thing, because I literally heard it the night it happened, they announced it, and I caught it because I was working and I was listening. Do people realize, people need to realize BP is a European company. It's registered in England and Wales. And the Queen of England and Prince, whatever his name is,
sure they do.
From these guys in dividends and so on.
Well, and let's take the longer historical view. You know our little ongoing problem with Iran, Margaret? You know how we had that hostage crisis and they took over the embassy and all of that stuff?
And Reagan made a deal.
Well, remember...
Bush made a deal.
Right, but very, very few people remember that all of those young students who are now middle-aged people who were out there in front of the embassy chanting and screaming and carrying pictures of Ayatollah Khomeini, well, some of them, a lot of them, in fact, also had pictures of a little old guy named Mohammad Mossadegh.
Yep.
Know who he was?
Well, he was the elected.
He was the elected prime minister of Iran when Iran was making steps toward becoming a viable democracy in the region. But they got all froggy and decided that they owned the oil that was under their land.
Oh, my goodness gracious, how bad is that?
Yeah, I know. And that did not sit well with what then was called the British Iranian Oil Company.
That's right.
Which became BP.
Yep.
Which exerted influence on the British government, and the British government then exerted influence on the American government. Harry Truman did not bite. Harry Truman wanted no part of it. Harry Truman said, those people elected that man, he's their guy, it's their government, their business. Because at the end of World War II, we had these new phrases like self-determination banging around out there.
Yeah.
And Harry actually believed in some of it. So what happens? Well, Dwight Eisenhower comes into office. And the Brits, the British government comes back and says, you know, come on, we can't, it really wouldn't be seemly, old boy, for us to do it ourselves. It would look rather ham-fisted, and we've got all this problem of getting out of India, you know. And the next thing you know, the American, Eisenhower authorizes the CIA in one of its first coups to go and take down Mohammad Mossadegh and install this creepy little boot polisher named Reza Pahlavi, who took the peacock throne and became the Shah.
The Shah of Iran. Yep.
And out of that, out of nothing more than what became BP's insatiable lust for money and oil and power, an entire couple of generations of human misery in that region was born. And this is also taking place at about the same time that the nation of Israel is being born. Interesting, huh?
Yeah, it's all tied together. The thing about the Gulf well, you know, BP, they have, I think it's 11 deeper wells than are actually actually deeper than this one that they were digging into, that are online, and none of them have an acoustic, whatever that gizmo is, to shut them off. None of them. Now, yeah, there's around 4,000 or 5,000 wells in the Gulf, but most of them are much shallower. But BP has 11 rigs going right now without a safety.
Is it only 11?
Well, in this area, and in this one, this
because I was looking at an email from Kate earlier, in which she said 33 more rigs out in the water that are operating without proper regulation.
Right, but there's 11 right in this vicinity, coming out of this underwater canyon that actually goes up to the Mississippi Delta, the Mobile Bay. Not Mississippi Delta, the Mobile Bay Delta. The absurdity of this is that I was reading where they were actually calculating, non-BP people, that the day, at the time of this actual explosion, there was actually 8,000 barrels a day of pressure coming out at the sea level. And that this suggested that the release at the seafloor level would be far greater. And this reporter who's written this report, which was on Op-Ed News, he said, my source reports that the pressure in the well was reported to be between 135 and 165,000 PSI. And that this pocket of oil that they're pulling out of has 1.8 billion gallons of oil in it with gas. Now, that's extraordinary. That's an extraordinary bomb waiting to happen. So now they're talking about we got to stop it with a nuke. Would that not deaden the entire eastern from the Mississippi?
I'm not, Margaret, competent to talk about what, well, we don't know. But, you know, explosives, it wouldn't have to be a nuke. Other explosive solutions have been posited as well.
But a nuke, come on, please. On, Bloomberg News on Saturday.
Oh, no,
Bloomberg
people.
News on Saturday.
There are people out there who want to see nukes used, who view them as Roman candles just sitting there waiting to be lit. Oh, come on, we can't drop it on one? Can't we at least drop it on the well, please? I want to see it go boom.
Yeah, they sure do.
You know, what would the concussive effects be? What would happen to the unstable plate tectonics in the region anyway? Anybody remember
exactly
that there was an earthquake in, you know, like Haiti?
Yeah, 79 or something like that. Yes, there was an earthquake. And it was that Teutonic plate where that meets. The scientists have always looked at that as a very quiet, sort of non, you know, threatening type quake area. But what
this is absurd. This is beyond, I mean, I can't even talk intelligent about it. My mind just goes ballistic.
Yeah, see, that's the same thing that happens to me for 3 hours a night. It's a constant struggle. This is actually work.
You did a hell of a job last night, let me tell you. You did a hell of a job last night. I was so thankful you were on live. You were the only thing live in America. And it was such a, you know, you may realize it. You've probably been told this. But my head was exploding when I discovered Mike Malloy when he was on Air America. When he first came on Air America, somebody told me about it, and I desperately. And it was my relief valve. You fellas are my relief valve, and probably so for many of us because we are exploding in our minds.
Well, let's hope that the right wing never gets to do a top kill on us.
Oh, they're doing a good job of that. They're already doing a good job of that.
Truth. Truth.
And you
truth.
Know what? I cannot believe that come this election 2010, November, that the Americans, that those of us who voted and put Obama into office, and I still think this man is a good man, and I still think, you know, a lot of people say he is emotionally reserved. His personality is of a reserve type. Anybody who goes through law school, if you don't come out, you can go in emotional. But by the end of the first year, if you haven't gotten rid of your emotion and squelched your compassion, you're put on a watch list. And by the second year, if you haven't done it, you're out. By the fourth year, you're dead. And so you come.
That's close. I made it through all three, but. You know.
Well, good for you, but you didn't get, you know, but you hear what I'm saying. I was headed to law, and my father asked me what area of law I wanted to study, and I told him that I wanted to be a constitutional lawyer, and he laughed at me, and he said, no, I won't finance that. And I looked at him, I said, why not? And he said, you can go be a corporate lawyer, and I'll help you do that. And I looked at him, and I went, not in your lifetime.
Nah, he was just putting up roadblocks.
Yes.
Because there's no such thing as a lawyer who isn't a constitutional lawyer. The Constitution touches all things.
Yes.
And you know, people
sure run over it real well.
People, you know, people come in with certain preconceived notions of what kind of lawyer they're going to be. I was going to be Atticus Finch. It ain't possible. It ain't possible. And that's why I'm behind a microphone instead of behind, instead of standing doing, you know, lawyery things. Because some of that, you're right. There is a reservation and a requirement that one be cold and calculated and reptilian in a courtroom. And in large part, I cannot do that. So that's why I'm here. Margaret, I got to roll along. A couple more blinking lights, but awfully good to hear from you, dear.
I've been listening. I usually am sitting here wire wrapping my jewelry and working while I listen. And if I get on the phone, I sort of like don't even want to go back to doing that for the rest of the night. So, but have a good evening and thank you. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Margaret. Thank you very much.
Bye
now. Margaret calling from Asheville and onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Lee.
Hey, Lee, what's up?
I'm back in Nashville, last day of the tour, and then we're making the long drive first thing in the morning to Austin.
Oh, man, that'll be a brutal ride.
Yeah. So, and I very deliberately saved when I was doing driving. I've been, you know, because I haven't gotten a podcast in 2 weeks, you know.
And oh, you got some catching up to do.
Yeah, I do. And, you know, here's the other drag that I found. You've talked about this before, but half the places we stayed, I couldn't get MSNBC. So, you know, I was just completely out. And, you know, the guys in the van were just, you know, listening to Willie or 13th Floor Elevators, which is all fine, you know, but at the same time, there's just other stuff that I wanted to, you know, definitely get caught up on. So, did I hear you right? They're talking about a nuke?
Oh, the people keep talking about that because they want to see what happens when a nuke goes off.
Jesus. Okay.
Yeah, because the concussive force from that's going to be real good for the oyster and shrimp beds that aren't dead yet. You know, the ones that aren't dead yet.
I meant to ask you that. I was thinking about that the other day. Is there such thing as shrimp futures?
You know, I'm sure there are. If you can make a buck at it, there's some corporatist out there who wants to.
Yeah.
I mean, if we do pork bellies, I'm sure we do shrimp. Because they go so well together.
Yeah. What was I going to, so I finished the Biggers book, Reckoning at Eagle Creek, and then promptly gave it away to some friends that I was visiting in Connecticut while I had some time off, just because I thought it was that important of a book. But, I also met a guy in Pittsburgh, his name is Tom, I can't remember his last name, but he did a whole album called Full Circle, just about the coal fields. And I mean, we sat up late at night smoking cigarettes
and cigars.
Yeah, we sat up, no, we were drinking and smoking cigars. In fact, they were West Virginia, but now they're made in Indiana or something like that. Mifflin's Choice.
Oh, okay. I was thinking.
A Wheeling?
Marsh Wheeling? Oh, sure. Yeah, those are awful. Delightfully so.
Yeah.
Somebody get me a Parodi and a poncho and a hat and let me be Clint Eastwood.
Well, they're a lot better than Swishers, you know, that's for sure.
Well, yeah, but then again, so is a smoking dog turd, but, you know, that's me.
What marketing sell on those, though.
Yeah, well, but, you know, that's me being an elitist.
this guy gave me, and I started tearing into that today, and I'm flying through it, and it's that Battle for Blair Mountain.
Ah, yeah.
Is that what it's called?
Well, I mean, that's one of, yeah, I mean, that's what it was called.
I think that's the name of the book. The Battle of Blair Mountain by Robert Shogun.
Okay.
Have you read that one?
No, I have not.
That's pretty neat. I mean, it's given me that stuff that I've been, you know, just desiring, and that's, you know, more on the education and the labor movement stuff. And, oh, by the way, going out of West Virginia, we went into, on our way to Pittsburgh, I can't remember what the interstate is, but there's a John L. Lewis, and it's on the side of a mining disaster from 62 that was United Steel.
Wow. Don't think I've seen that. If I had a little bit more...
You're going into Pennsylvania.
Okay, maybe Farmington, Monaga, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I mean, they had the list of the dead and everything else, but it was a United Steel-involved mine or whatever, and, yeah, it's just been a real good educational trip, if nothing else. Yeah, and I took and gave them...
So let me see, you came down I-79 to Charleston... And went west on I-64 through Kentucky, and now you're in Nashville, right?
No, we didn't. No, because we wound up in New York at one point, but we went to, spent the night in West Virginia, and then went from West Virginia to Pennsylvania to play just outside of Pittsburgh, and then went into Pittsburgh. Boy, that's pretty cool. I've never seen a city that actually had an entrance on it before.
Yeah, see what I mean when I talk about it? It's the most stirring view of any city in the United States. There's nothing like coming out eye level with the skyscrapers.
Yeah, you can't even see it going in on the other side. You come out of that tunnel.
It's just it's like something out of J.R.R. Tolkien. It's like, you know, Gondolin or whatever it was, you know, that city hidden in the hills.
Yes, sir. Well, from what I understand, there's some YouTube clips up, and you can go look up, you know, the Rosie Flores or whatever from when we were in New York City and all that stuff.
Oh, cool.
And, I'll shoot you a link or whatever. Like,
yeah, do shoot me links, and I'll share them around.
And that kid Chris Scruggs, who's, you know, Earl Scruggs' grandson, his mom is Gail Davies, and she's awesome in and of herself. I don't know if you know any of her stuff from, like, the mid-'80s, maybe?
I'm sure I'll get schooled pretty quick.
Well, yeah, he's definitely a country blue blood, so it's just really down to earth and can pretty much play anything. You ready?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I got to run real quick. By the way, the kid pointed out, he was talking about in the old days, you got the pioneers and they're out on the trail and things are just really, really tough. And every once in a while, somebody would break out a fiddle and make things worse. We'll
if only
you later, sir.
Later, Lee. That's beautiful.
We'll see you.
Bye now. Every now and then, somebody would break out a fiddle and make things worse. Oh, God, that's sweet. Yeah, in the cigar business. Hey, is that a white owl? I smell feathers burning. Oh, keeping it rolling. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Sandra.
Hey, yeah, so that Peter Gabriel, that was appreciated. I love that record.
I bought that a couple of weeks ago, and I've got such mileage out of it. I just sit around listening to it.
Yeah, no, the games was out front. I mean, that stuff was great. You know, I see. Once again, I forget we're the same damn age. So of course, I'm sure you know the Brian Eno, all that business.
Oh, yeah.
All that stuff was great when it first came out. Anyway, yeah, so I enjoyed it.
Yeah, one of these days, I'll find a reason to play Biko, and then, you know, I may just have to shut the show down.
Yeah. Well, no, it's just been, I forget about Peter Gabriel. I know he's still performing. His family members are, you know, he's kind of, he did a few collaborations with some, I forget that one singer from Mali. But, yeah, I always liked him. He's pretty good. So let me ask you something about some of these other progressive talkers. What is it about Israel? I mean, they're constantly saying both sides. I'm like, what are you talking about? I mean, even Tom Hartman was, waffling and contorting the whole thing. It's like, there hasn't been both sides in so long. You know what I mean?
I've never understood how you say both sides when one side has tons and tons of guns and the other side is Charlie Brown saying, I got a rock.
Well, no, but it's been years since they used to have those horrible explosions in the cafes in Tel Aviv and, the sort of full-on attack that was going on, which, I agree is quite horrific. But that...
And unacceptable, sure. I'm the nonviolence guy.
Yeah, but that narrative now is just such a load, and for Hartman to go on saying that, the people on the boat shouldn't even fought back. I'm like, what planet, dude? The Gandhi thing is all nice and well, but no. Who in their right mind would not struggle when that country is coming at you? You know what I'm saying? There's no room. They just kill. So if those people were fighting back in some manner, I'm not really surprised. And
well, let's, I mean,
roll over.
Yeah, let's look at this. I mean, it's pretty clear now that these commandos landed on the deck of that ship when people were asleep. Now, if Agnes shakes me too hard when I'm asleep, I come up ready to fight. I mean, I'm serious. And I'm not a violent guy.
Well,
when you shock someone out of all you know is there's a helicopter and there's people with guns on deck. Do something about the people with the guns.
No,
this BS of, did you see this piece of, my God, wouldn't stand up and a judge would run you out of court for offering this. The Israelis said, well, they were shooting at us, and that's proven by the fact that we found handguns on them with no ammunition in them. Excuse me? Aristotle? Does that work for you?
Good Lord. No, but see, let's back up. What the hell? They're in international water. I mean, the whole thing is just so disgusting because if Israel is in the right, why the hell won't they let anyone talk to these people they're holding?
You mean the people they kidnapped?
Right.
Can we use the actual language, Sandra? They kidnapped them.
Okay. Why are, you know what I'm saying? It's like, give me a break. Only dumbass Americans allow that narrative to just be taken for granted. And the idea of Pelosi, equivocating, like, that was so disgusting. It's like, huh? What the hell are you talking about? I mean, all of it is just so beyond the beyond. And,
it all kind of goes back, Sandra, I think, to that whole notion of can't we try something new? Because we all know that the constant repetition of the same act expecting a different result is the definition of insanity. What would happen? Let's try something new. Let's say Barack Obama, you pick up the phone and you call Benjamin Netanyahu and say, "I'm glad you canceled your meeting. Don't schedule another one because you're dead to me. I don't know you. I know you not."
It's just...
Let's try that one. See how that works.
It's just incredible. And it's like the one caller who was talking about the sort of history of it. And, when you were saying with this, nothing precious there, it's sort of, right. I mean, this is once again another situation that the bipolar dichotomy contribute to it. You know what I mean? And the guilt of what happened. I mean, they could have put the state of Israel somewhere else. Let's be honest.
Baja.
Bart
Kopp offered Oklahoma a long time ago.
Well, it's just kind of you know, the apologists for these criminals. I mean, all they're doing is politics by other means, you know, which is a never-ending war, you know? They're not attempting...
And see, that's the place that I've gotten to inside my own head, Sandra, and that is they want the never-ending war.
Oh, they just want those... They want the Palestinians... I mean, I don't know if it was Netanyahu or one of them people said, well, we're putting the Palestinians on a diet. We don't want them to starve to death, but... That was a direct quote from one of them freaks when they did the blockade. And this whole thing with Hamas makes me sick. Can you say ANC or the IRA? What the F? Bring these groups...
To the table.
No, they've already brought themselves by being elected. They didn't take over.
Yeah, I read that the other day. What is... Hamas took power and... No, they didn't.
Then they didn't. And hello, when the ANC was rip-roaring, neck-lacing, doing whatever the hell they was doing, it still didn't stop the international community from... allowing them to have electoral power. And same with the IRA. What the hell are they now? They're in parliament, aren't they? You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so give me a break from this bullshit of characterizing these people as not people so they can keep this going, which is all that is, right? We've seen this movie over and over again. And I'm sick that we're on the wrong side. We're still on the wrong side of this at this point.
You know, I was reading, that because I've always got to have something to read right before bed, Sandra. I picked up Tom Robbins' classic Still Life with Woodpecker right before bed last night. And this thing was published in 1980. And there's just a sort of offhand remark where Tom Robbins writes, so-and-so was, the family was removed from the monarchy because the United States hates to interfere in the doings of foreign powers unless they're left-leaning foreign powers, in which case they'll use the right-leaning foreign powers to interfere in their affairs. And I went, well, yeah. And this is from a goofy little novel from 1980.
Shut up. Yeah, no. I mean, it's just like the standard mode. And, you know, Obama is just impotent all around these days. It's like, dude, start... You know, govern. I don't know what the hell is going on. It's making me feel sick.
Well, I think we've got to start, Sandra, by reevaluating why we think Israel is so damned important.
Well, yeah, no.
I mean, if it was the only place on earth you could get capers or saffron, then there would be a greater economic reason for our bowing and scraping than there is now.
No, and by the way, Israel has full national health care for their people. Let's not start. I mean, domestically, our people are suffering. In the meanwhile, we're turning over billions.
Right, and we subsidize that.
Yeah, to a pariah state, apartheid part two. And then I have to listen to these people apologize, these so-called lefties. It's all... too much. I mean, I know your show is almost over, but one other thing was getting to me. Is this the destruction of the Miranda? What the F, man?
It's all going away, Sandra. I didn't even get to that story tonight. I'm ashamed of myself.
Yeah,
going away.
Well, that's too much because it's like, I have to, you know what I mean, invoke the right in order to have it. Kafka.
Yeah, but that's, you know, that's just a cheap shorthand for just over, and again, I can't, yeah, we're almost out of time, but this has to be said. You know, I remember when Roberts and Alito sat there and, oh, well, you know, stare decisis is the cornerstone upon which our jurisprudential mandament is maintained, what it? And I thought, you lying sack of, I know better. And so this is the sort of sleight of hand that right-wing legal types use to subvert. And again, it's an old philosophy. Take power via democratic process and then overturn the democratic process by using the power you took.
No, and in the meantime, we have to be satisfied with a question mark replacing Stevens. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
What is the point of having a Democrat if it's going to be like this?
I know.
I understand that, you know, but anyway, I'll let you go. Hey, just something came over the wire. I guess the Prime Minister of Japan is about to resign. They just got in, so that's a bit odd.
Yeah, that I expect we'll probably hear from Robert in Japan maybe tomorrow or something to update on that.
Anyway,
it's all, but you know, that's maybe that's the new slogan, Sandra. It's all going away.
I'll keep
and we get to watch. We've got ringside seats.
No. You know, I want to go to the beach.
Yeah, sorry. That went away, too.
Oh, wow. Okay, Bob, have a good evening.
All right, later, Sandra. Bye now. It's all going away, and we get to watch. See, the Supreme Court can't just come out and say, we're sorry, we're overturning Miranda, and none of that counts anymore. Because that might affect the residual value of reruns of Dragnet, where they have to read the rights, and we wouldn't want the proles all confused. So we say, well, Miranda still exists, but you have to affirmatively assert it. Jesus, what if you affirmatively assert it in Hmong, or in Vietnamese, or in Spanish, or in anything except what the cop speaks? Hard cases make bad law. So that's the program tonight. Thanks, everybody, for joining in. Remember, there is a PayPal button at headonradionetwork.com. We finished in the hole, in the red, for May, so we start June the same way. If you can help and you haven't lately, it is much, much appreciated, I hope you know. It's what keeps all of this going. Margaret said a few minutes ago, you know, I was so glad because you were the only person who was live in America last night. Well, that's what you can count on the horn for. This ain't no hobby. This is the real thing. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this go. Lottie in the chat room, Gene and Susan, our news ninjas, Texas Betsy, our blogger. Our Southeast correspondent is Matt Osborne, Osborneink, osborneinc.com. My head writer is David in Tennessee. Many, many technical snafus and hurdles and crises are handled on a daily basis by John Fox, our webmaster, chief engineer, web designer, and just about any other hat that I ask him to wear, he gladly puts on and does what he can. Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org. is the hardest working man in liberal talk. There would be no liberal talk on the internet if it weren't for Ben Birch. It's that simple. And of course, our IT professional is the once and hopefully sometime future world's most fabulous LGBT conversation radio host, Peter Godbold. The hardest working, bravest people I know are the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ColeRiverWind.org. And always, 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 Gina. It's all for you.
Cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy!
Come on, baby. Come on, baby.
It is a minute and a half past the hour. Thus begins the Tuesday evening edition of The Horn. I'm Bob. And I hope your day has been a good one, wherever it has been, wherever you have been, wherever... Well, maybe it'll be a good one, because this is tomorrow, not today. And Time. Time flies like an arrow. Fruit flies like a banana. Never mind, that was just awful. But there is an element of time to the wee complaint that initiates the program this evening. By the way, speaking of time, I enjoyed the nigh 4 hours that I pulled last night with you guys. It was a lot of fun going extra innings in since Malloy was absent. We just took a run at doing a little more show than we ordinarily would have been. But Malloy's back live this evening, I understand, so we're back to our regular format. Hot diggity damn. Now, time. And really, this is petty on my part. But for the same reason that I felt like I had to be on the air last night after I saw the developing murderous debacle in the Mediterranean, in which Israeli pirates raided a nonviolent, peace-oriented ship full of humanitarian aid bound for Gaza, the same thing that made me feel, it's the same thing that makes me frustrated at the end of oh so many shows for the stuff that we don't get to. And one of the, well, and then there's the stuff that breaks as soon as I close the microphone. And I, you know, those are those Homer Simpson don't moments. Because I had no sooner closed out the show, and I went an extra hour last night, you know? I had no sooner closed out the show than the folks over at Think Progress.